part of the agenda of the get a briefing on the smart card project led by the Department of Commerce. These are going to be issues that we're going to deal with. Regard to the issue of the annual report, members, as you know, I know that parties were already making a number of suggestions, but without really coming to those points now. I think those are points that we can deal with later. Let us give an opportunity to the Director General to introduce his delegation and to then proceed with the presentation. And I believe that on the issues of the displacement of persons and temporary shelters, you'll be able to deal with that too. We expected that we'll get a full report of this around those issues. So on that note, DG, we'll then afford you this opportunity to present to the committee your annual report, and the members can then engage with your presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair, and to honorable members. We are happy to be here. May I, while they are fidgeting with the PowerPoint, take the opportunity to present our delegation. Siobhan McCarthy is closest to the chair. She's in charge of communication. Mr. Jackie, is in charge of immigration services. I think Gosim Kize is acting in charge of civic services. The acting CFO is on my left, Segre Naidu. And we have other colleagues who are operating the machine. Perhaps, Chair, I would like to thank you for this opportunity and say that the presentation of a report of this nature would cause us to bring in as few people as possible to so that you deal with people who are responsible. We deal with people who are responsible for each of the sectors in the report. We are a little larger than we would have liked to be because we anticipate a number of questions which may be answered by the people who have been invited here to. We are saddened by the fact that the department has received yet another disclaimer. Perhaps we should understand the context within which we have been operating during the year under review. I, as DG, joined the department 10.5 months into the new year, so there was quite a bit of time to deal with those issues. But we have been acting, the CFO, we had baggage, colleagues, that needed to be sorted out. This is not news to the Portfolio Committee, but things in government do not happen as fast as one would like them to. You necessarily have to follow and respect certain bureaucratic arrangements in handling these situations. I'd just like to point out that we have at the moment an acting CFO, because the CFO who was suspended, that process is still going on, and there isn't much the department can do to fast track it. It's in the hands of bigger people. The CFO started in November, that is 5 months before the end of the financial year. We have Jackie in charge of immigration services, who started in February this year already. That's about 2 months to the end of the financial year. Up to then, there was an acting person. The GITO, the Government Information Technology Officer, joined us in November. So up to that point, there was a very junior officer acting in the position. And we have Mr. Mkize, who was appointed only in October, that is about 6 months before the end of the financial year, to take charge of civics branch. All these things, of course, happened because until certain processes that deal with suspensions are finalized, you may not place persons. So that's the context I would like to appeal to the members to take into account as they read this report. But as explicitly stated by the Auditor General, the finding comes in spite of very good work that was made by the department in addressing issues that were raised in previous audits. I want to say, in addition to what I've mentioned, I'd like to mention the following, that before anything could be done to address the issues that were existing at the time, we needed an 8-week period during which to analyze the status quo and design solutions. And this included looking at the report that was prepared by the support intervention team, looking at the work that had been done by the Fever Tree consultants, looking at a detailed study of the AG reports of the past, and then dealing with issues of persons who had to be suspended and then replacing them with people only in the short term because of what I explained a little earlier. Then we needed, of course, to have consultations with the National Treasury, requesting a repackaging of budgets because what existed at the time did not quite conform to what was being discovered. Sorry, Chair, I don't know why we seem to be stunned.
Honourable Member, DG, must I point to that we are experiencing some technical problems, but we are going to face the IT guy.
I don't know what the direction of the chair would be.
Chair, I was saying we are experiencing some technical problems, but we are attending to it. We are going to call the IT guy.
Now, the presentation will be in this format.
Yes, that's the presentation.
Is it part of Home Affairs problems on IT? Or is it
I think we have been sabotaged.
No, this Parliament. Parliament will not do that. We'll never sabotage you. We want you to account. Yeah, okay. Which one? I think Stephen is checking. So. Okay, we can just sort of proceed. For those who don't have documents, I think unfortunate, but if we have made documents available, we can sort of go through these documents. And leave your slide presentation. Okay, DG, I think we can proceed with the. I think members, you're satisfied. Huh? All right, DG, I think you'll have to use the.
Thank you, Chair. We're on page 3 of the document, the introduction. I have just finished talking about actions that had to be taken before dealing with the issues that were challenging the department when the financial year started. And those are indicated. What's not written is what I said a little earlier about the people who have started to be in the position who were placed for the implementation of the program, coming late into the program because of clearly unavoidable circumstances. But the last bullet starts to address the improvements that the IAG himself recognized. We have improved contract management, and that has resulted in substantial savings in cash that we can will demonstrate. We've created an immigration account financial statements. We've created those to resolve the legacy problems that went back quite a few years. There has been an allocation of significant resources and time and levels to address revenue management, asset management, and risk management. Portfolio committee may recall that at a certain time we gave a turnaround strategy program and progress report, which indicated the extent, the risks that have been identified within the department. Now, although progress was made, the benefits of these initiatives were not sufficient to be fully captured in the 2000-2008 financial report, financial year, because of what are deep-rooted and pervasive problems existing in the department. In the longer term, we will need to invest substantially in the development of human resources, in the development of systems, and in infrastructure in order to achieve the objectives that have been set. We are, sadly, Chair and members of the committee, anticipating that we may have a continuation of qualified audit reports in the next year and might be the next one also, unless we get some support from National Treasury and the Department of Foreign Affairs in respect of the foreign component of revenue management. You will be aware that we've got missions in different countries, and they fall under the Department of Foreign Affairs, and reporting comes to us via the Department of Foreign Affairs head office in Tswane. And the cycle there, unavoidably, is much longer than a financial year. We are discussing how to streamline that. There would always be a note on that. If it wasn't a qualified report, it certainly would be an emphasis of the matter. Then there is the immigration account, too, where expenditures were incurred, or monies were paid into the department by people who never traveled eventually. So in theory, those monies belong to certain people. The likelihood of people ever claiming those funds is highly, highly unlikely. But that needs to be discussed and agreed with the departments that are referred to. If we proceed to page 5 and 6, the annual report, which is the subject of our discussion today, we're reporting against the 3-year strategic plan that, which is organized under 6 high-level integrated strategic objectives in support of government priorities. The annual performance plan for the department, which was amended to take account of new projects and deliverables arising from the transformation program. The annual report also reports against the audited financial statements. So you've got the program side and the financial statement side. GPW will be presenting independently, and this report will come from the accounting officers, reflect on the accounting officer's report for Home Affairs and the accounting officer's report for GPW. And there is the appropriation account and related notes. The departmental context to start with. We are intending to turn the department into a modern, efficient, and cost-effective service organization that responds to the needs of South African citizens, residents, and visitors. The minister and her cabinet colleagues mobilized a support intervention team that in March 2007 produced a report that detailed a need for transformation. She launched the comprehensive and well-resourced turnaround program for the department in June 2007, and support came from National Treasury and a service provider who was selected as Fever Tree. Phase one of the six-month phase, or the six-month phase, from June to lasted from June to December 2007. The turnaround program has two phases. We're in the second phase now. The first one having ended in December. Its aim essentially was to identify and understand the problems and to design responses and requisite solutions. A major focus in phase one was to develop a new vision and design for the department that was service and customer focused. We also, as is known here, developed a number of quick win areas for phase one. It wasn't going to be enough to simply identify problems, study the situation, but we looked at things that could be done and results accomplished quickly. These were then earmarked for immediate action, and significant success was achieved in all these areas. Examples are improvements in the ID process and the establishment of a large accounts project, which was intended to facilitate the recruitment of much-needed expatriate skills. While phase one was about understanding the problems as indicated already, phase two of the turnaround is about broad-based implementation of change. Phase two will run from January this year to December 2009. A third phase, to consolidate and complete the implementation of the turnaround, will follow in 2010 and 2011. The entire DHA turnaround effort has a five-year learning horizon. Turnaround is intended to transform the department with respect to four key areas: service delivery and the facilities from which these are undertaken, looking at people and the organizational structure, addressing issues of corruption, security and risk, as well as information systems, information technology. The strategic plan for 2007-2008 to FY 2007-2008 to 2009-2010 was tabled in May 2007, prior to the commencement of the turnaround. The project from phase one, namely June to December 2007, and phase two, January to March 2008, were later integrated into the planning of the DHA and resulted in the production of a revised annual performance plan. The revised plan portrays a true reflection of what is being achieved and how funding was utilized. The Portfolio Committee was informed of this in November 2007 and provided with a table of deliverables per project. I will go into some selected achievements per strategic objective. In our strategic objectives, of which there are six, the first one is to provide secure, efficient, and accessible civic and related services and products to citizens and legitimate residents within specified time frames. Against this strategic objective, we improved the ID turnaround time from 127 days to approximately, I must correct this, 42 days as we report today, and has been achieved over the past 2 months through the transformation of the ID processes and the rollout of online verification. We are talking about changes that took place in the area where the IDs are processed in Pretoria but also some new technologies that were introduced in the field to fast-track the process. This was essentially a process re-engineering effort. We also launched an electronic tracking system for ID applications. It's called Track and Trace, and it was rolled out to more than 250 offices. This is a system that informs the person who puts in an application that their application has been received and gives an estimated time when they can expect to have their ID book back. This has had a direct impact on the citizens, and there has been a very positive reaction by citizens who applaud the introduction of the element of predictability in the documents that they apply for. We also have had a notorious backlog of more than 236,000 records in the fingerprint verification section, and all of that was eliminated. We do not have a backlog in the fingerprint verification area. Continuing with the first strategic objective, which is to provide secure, efficient, accessible services, the backlog in the fingerprint capturing was brought down from 495,000 to just under 100,000. The implementation of the new coat of arms in South African passports and travel documents was also achieved. This is a task that falls mainly within the government print works. The implementation of a new contact center solution that led to the general improvement in the handling of customer calls to the toll-free number, 80% of the calls are answered within 20 seconds. It's an achievement that was done some months back, and they've held to that record. This, honorable members, was necessitated. The value of setting up a contact center was to make sure that those who could find information via asking an efficient call center would then avoid the need to go and queue in the lines, and therefore contribute to the easing of the congestion in the queues that are familiar with Home Affairs officers. Still on the same strategic objective number one, the ID process transformation, we added some four scanning machines to increase throughput. There are 400 front office staff members who have been trained to use a quality Q&A checklist to improve quality of application. We've had four pilot projects with redesigned front-end ID process using online fingerprint verification capabilities. These have been rolled out. And a new end-to-end ID process with 15 steps instead of the 80 has been instituted. 22 million birth, marriage, and death certificates were sorted and indexed at the end of 2007 and 2008. The second strategic objective of the organization, of the department, is to manage migration effectively by enabling the movement of skilled workers into the country and efficiently and securely facilitating the entry, stay, and exit of visitors. We have completed the 2010 FIFA World Cup user requirements to enable process re-engineering. There could be a more detailed report for that if it's required by the committee. We also established what is called a large account unit to fast-track various work permits. We started with four accounts during the reporting year, and that serviced 1,800 permits. And these the companies that had applied were Anglo-American, which got 469, ArcelorMittal at 611, Lafarge 400, and the Gautrain project at 318. This is what we did was to deploy people in the offices of these large companies to provide a help desk to fast track these applications. You've noticed that some of them are related to the current massive construction project that's taking place in the country and are critical towards the enablement of the country of 2010, hosting of 2010. Also, 1,133 work permits were issued to foreigners with scarce and critical skills. It's this is to be compared with 194 the previous year. Strategic objective number 4, which says we intend to foster domestic, regional, and national cooperation towards improved economic growth and development, including events with strategic importance to the country. We have signed a number of MOUs, India, Tanzania, and Sudan. We've trained some immigration officers from Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Oh, I am very sorry. I think they bound. It's good they're listening. Thank you very much, honorable members. The third objective, is to determine the status of asylum seekers. I wasn't running away from xenophobia. And to manage refugee affairs in accordance with international treaties and the Bill of Rights as enshrined in the Constitution. Refugee affairs capacity has been strengthened by the appointment of 4 directors and 2 deputy directors to head reception centers and the appointment of 191 officials during the reporting period. We have deployed now a new refugee and deportation system, which is a biometric system, and the piloting has been done. As we report today, beyond the time frame of the report, the systems have now been linked to the Home Affairs National Information System, HANIS. Maraba Start, notorious for many years, the infrastructure, equipment and system have now been improved. We invite members to visit that place. It should be very different from what was seen in the past. The counter-xenophobia unit was brought out and was part of the task team that dealt with attacks in Atteridgeville and other places, and that distributed the Stop Xenophobia pamphlets in a door-to-door awareness, in door-to-door awareness campaigns. Here, perhaps I need to mention that this is but a small unit. Its function is important, but it's the task of dealing with issues of xenophobia fall largely on citizens of on departments and organizations of the country where the immigrants happen to be settled. Strategic objective number 4, thanks for the correction, which was to foster regional cooperation. We have signed the visas, the waiver of diplomatic and official passports as indicated, with Tanzania, Sudan, and India, provided training for immigration officials from Rwanda and DRC. Visa agreements have been concluded with Korea, Tanzania, Vietnam, with respect to diplomatic and official passport holders, and with Belarus for ordinary citizens. The facilitation of the movement agreement with Lesotho has been signed. It's much, much easier now to pass through the border for citizens and others. The repatriation of records that were held in South Africa has taken place to Namibia. strategic objective number four, these are merely highlights. There will be a lot more things that took place under those objectives. The fifth objective is to deliver the department's mandate effectively by implementing a new organizational model that is characterized by caring officials who serve with professionalism and effective governance and operational control. The new operating model was developed following fairly extensive consultation surveys carried out with the users of Home Affairs services. This is an operation that was done jointly with Makino and interviewed in excess of 700 citizens with respect to what they expected of a Home Affairs office. The result of that led us to design an organization and facilities that would suit what we learned from the survey. A high-level plan to transform the department in line with this has then been developed and agreed. As I speak to the members today, this is now being implemented. A new governance structure was recommended, and implementation began with a revised executive committee and the establishment of an operations committee. A draft policy and legislative conceptual framework has been developed, and it will be going to cabinet and to portfolio committee and members of the public. The strategic objective number six talks about a need to create an enabling environment by putting in place support services that are effective, efficient, integrated, and that prevent corruption. Finance and risk. All six previous audit reports were categorized and key risks and as risk and issues are prioritized. Key risks and issues were prioritized based on the findings. A strategy was developed to deal with risks that are associated with the situation at Roslyn, which is the document's archive depot. Cash handling machines have been piloted in four offices with revenue collection. We've got an asset register that's been compiled. New tender and contract management processes were finalized, and SLAs were signed, and a savings measurable of 68 million rand was realized as a result of our renegotiating of the Lindela Deportation Center. It took quite a bit of discussion and heckling with the Auditor General for us to agree that the Lindela problem had been resolved in the best possible manner that could be achieved in the circumstances. There is potential to save up to 40 million rand with key suppliers that has been identified as a result of contract revisions. Continuing on objective number six, information services. The IT projects and architecture to support the operating model requirements were agreed to. I want to say to you, Chair, and members of the committee, that we lagged behind very badly in our IT implementation area, and that has, in very many ways, handicapped progress by the department. It's a situation that has been resolved now, and we expect to proceed with speed now that we have resources in place. Harness has been upgraded to a new technology. Harness is often maligned rather wrongly. It is a good system, and with its refreshing, it functions very adequately. Master Information Systems Plan and Enterprise Architecture have been updated. We will go into details should questions be asked. And the refugee interpretation system has also been deployed. What this means is that from the initial processing of about 50 applications per center, we are now working at the rate of, I think, over 350 practices, with a potential to do more. So, still on the sixth strategic objective, corporate services. We have performance agreements that have been relooked and improved, and they are now aligned to the annual performance plan. 70% functionality of the PESAL has been, this is the payroll system, has been achieved to ensure improvement on turnaround time in processing HR transactions. And we had meetings with union leaders and issued a joint statement of a shared intent on the turnaround objectives. The internal audit, still a strategic objective number six. We have now, for the first time, an approved audit charter. We recruited, again, these things unfortunately take time, the new audit chief director, I think at the beginning of this year. Comprehensive internal audit procedure has been adopted, a manual has been adopted. We are co-sourcing with a consortium of audit companies who are part of our internal audit group. We have what is called an enterprise-wide, department-wide risk management strategy that's been facilitated. And preliminary risk assessments have been conducted as part of the turnaround, with us identifying 10 top risks which were prioritized for management during the reporting period. On counter-corruption and security services, high-risk offices have been identified, and 36 other offices were evaluated. Prevention workshops have been conducted in all provinces, and workshops on security policy conducted nationally. Pre-employment screening of up to almost 500 prospective employees was conducted. Security evaluation was also conducted on 84 accommodation facilities. Corruption continues to be an area of vulnerability at Home Affairs and is indeed the problem with the country. That, in a nutshell, Chair, are some highlights of things that were done, even against the backdrop of a very unpalatable report. Chair, may I, with your permission, ask the Acting Financial Officer to present the financial information.
Thank you very much. Members, maybe before we allow the financial officer, is there any question that we want to deal with now, or we take the whole report? Thank you.
Thank you.
Are you still acting, or are you now full time now?
I'm still acting. Thank you, Chair, EG, and honorable members. I'm on slide 25. Just to give you a financial overview. 25. As the DG had alluded, the turnaround of the department began in earnest in June. However, the financial turnaround began in November 2007. And in meeting the year-end obligations, we had instituted weekly operational meetings with our auditors, the Auditor General and their agents, being KPMG, and the turnaround teams, and also monthly executive meetings with the AG executive themselves. In the year under review, the information systems budget had to be reprioritized given the aspects of the projects that needed to have been focused, and this was done in consultation and with the blessing of National Treasury. On page 26, the department began an asset exercise in February 2008. And given that it was so late during the year, when we had finished the year, by the time the audit had to have been done, we were still in a work in progress stage with the asset exercise. We had completed an asset register, but it wasn't in a sufficient manner to be audited, hence the paragraphs as alluded to in the Auditor General's report. A complete backlog of senior management service members' performance reviews dating back as far as 2003-04 were reviewed and concluded over the financial year, some in 2007-08 and some in 2008-09 financial year. Previously, SMS members, the senior management members, performances were not evaluated and not paid to them. As the DG had discussed, we had concluded negotiations to save 68 million rand in terms of the deportation holding facility contract, the Lindela contract. Last year, if members can remember, that was reported as a fruitless and wasteful exercise. And this year, in the year under review, we had saved on the balance of the contract 68 million rand. So having said that, from November, what could we have resolved in 5 months? On slide 27, those are primarily the areas that we have resolved. We have addressed the issue of reporting fraud and error in the financial statements. We have addressed the issue of the completeness of accruals within our financial statements. We have addressed the areas of completeness of commitments within our financial statements. We have addressed the areas of clearing of inter-responsibility accounts and suspense accounts, save the suspense accounts around cash and receipts. We have addressed the issue on the balancing of voted funds to the National Revenue Fund. We have addressed the area of disclosure of irregular expenditure within the financial statement. We've addressed the issue of incurring fruitless and wasteful expenditure. As you would see in the report, there aren't any fruitless and wasteful expenditure in the current year under review. We've addressed the issue of the non-existence of a fixed asset register. So at this stage, we have one that is that a fixed asset register does exist. However, like I said, in terms of the March 2008, we were not finished with our exercise. So the audit was done on a work in progress. We have addressed the issue on the accuracy of the cash flow statement. And the last issue I'd like to highlight is the immigration financial statement. As the members would remember, the auditors had said that a set of financial statements were not produced and hence could not be audited. In the year under review, we have analyzed 10 years' worth of financial data and produced financial statements for the past 5 years on this account. And those can be seen on pages 187 to 196 in the annual report. The Auditor General has not concluded his audit on those sets of financials, and he has only concluded on the department's financial statements. In terms of the objectives, the strategic objectives that the DG mentioned, how did we spend our funds regarding those strategic objectives? On slide 28, we have the program analysis, and one of the steps we've taken, this is the program analysis that existed as at the end of March 2008. Going forward, we have broken this down for reasons of transparency, we've now broken it down into four programs where we've separated the civics and the NIB into their separate programs. In terms of the expenditure, we've spent 92.1% of our budget, which translates into 7.9% of unspent. The primary areas, as can be seen in slide 29, in terms of compensation of employees, we've spent 97%, 3% unspent, and that translates into 33 million rand. In terms of goods and services, we spent 90% of our budget, translating into 138 million rand unspent. In the year of under review as well, financial transactions in assets and liabilities, these were transactions as we cleaned up the records of the department, clearance of transactions that should have dated back as far as 1999 and 2000 have been cleared in the current year. Things where the state expenditure, or sorry, the state attorneys had written to us to say this debt or the other debt they have considered to be written off were not done in previous years. In the year under review, we've now cleaned up those accounts, and that translates into 26.7 million. In terms of transfers and subsidies, we spent 99%, and the largest area of underspending is in terms of payment of capital assets, and I will get to those reasons on my next slide. In slide 30, as I had mentioned, the underspending in terms of employees is due to, in the year, we had concluded on the structure, in terms of, but we did not receive approval of that structure from DPSA. So the vacancies were inhibited, meaning we could not fill the vacancies given that we were redesigning the org structure of the department. In terms of the underspending in goods or services, mainly the underspending can be associated with the smart card budget, which did not materialize in the year under review. As the committee members would know, we would, and as can be seen later in terms of the smart card presentation, the tender was advertised in the year, in the current year, being the 8-9 financial year. So the budget which was in 7-8 could not be spent. And the passport system, because of delays in terms of it being received into the country, we could not spend that budget in terms of testing that machine in the year under review. I've spoken about financial transactions and in assets and liabilities. In terms of transfers and subsidies, the underfunding, underspending is related to severance packages that were not taken up by individuals. In terms of capital assets on page 31, the construction of new sites under the repairs and maintenance program, which we call RAMP, in which we have a deep dependency with the Department of Public Works, that did not come to the fore as we had anticipated. So a lot of the leases and the maintenance on the properties that we had earmarked to be concluded were concluded very late in the year. Over and above that, vehicles that were purchased, the invoices around those vehicles, although it was ordered in the financial year, the spending could only be done in the current financial year because the invoices only arrived in the current financial year. So the underspending in the department in the year under review totals 279.1 million rand. In terms of the audit opinion, there are six areas that still areas of challenge that still are with the department, and these are reported in the auditor's report in our financial statements. And those six areas are the areas around the completeness of our revenue, the auditability of the fixed asset register. As I had said, we have a fixed asset register, but because it was a work in progress, the findings were that of a piece of work in progress. In terms of the completeness of the lease register that we did have within the department historically only accounted for properties. It did not account for IT equipment, vehicles, and other aspects that we did lease within the department. Hence, the completeness of the lease register was found wanting. The supporting documentation in terms of government garage. In terms of that, it was an issue in the previous financial year. In the current financial year, we failed in that line item to produce 44 pieces of supporting documentation related to government garage. The majority of those 44 pieces of paper relate to petrol slips, the thermal slips that you get from a garage vendor. And we're putting in processes in terms of how do we actually have supporting documentation within the organization, given firstly that predominantly nobody keeps a fuel slip, secondly a fuel slip in terms of the fuel retail industry, they have a mandate to keep those slips for a period of 6 months, after which you cannot dispute anything on a fuel slip transaction. The last issue is that those slips actually fade as well over time. The supporting documentation around the immigration account and the classification of expenses. the immigration account, our huge dependency there is that the supporting documentation that gets generated for us to record into our books is generated by the Department of Foreign Affairs via the mission. So there is a time lag between that supporting documentation from the time it is generated in the missions to the time it is received and verified in the department. So that supporting documentation, there's a problem in accounting for that. In terms of the classification of expenses, as can be seen in the audit report, there were transactions that were posted to incorrect expense accounts. It related mostly to foreign allowances, where foreign allowance expenditure was captured as foreign allowance under salaries, which is incorrect. And the last area of concern was the clearing of the receipt and deposit accounts. This aspect, in the department, we have 38 suspense accounts. Of those 38, 32 of them have been analyzed and cleared. There are 6 that remain, and all 6 of them are related to the cash and cash equivalents, as the Auditor General has alluded to. In the report, in the accounting officer's report, we show progression in terms of the balance as at March 2008 and where we have progressed up to regarding that balance at the end of August 2008. All right, going forward, responding to these challenges. In terms of revenue, there are fundamental structural flaws in terms of processes around revenue, how we collect revenue within the organization, the local component and the foreign component. This area is going to be with us for a while, especially the foreign component, until we have DHA officials in all 186 foreign missions, as well as integrated systems in those foreign missions. At the moment, it is manual spreadsheets that are kept, and the accounting for that is sorely lacking. In terms of addressing the completeness of foreign revenue, we've separated the processes, looking first at our local revenue processes within our offices, including what we call the multi-purpose sites and our mobile units. The local revenue is being addressed by standard operating procedures. We began on a process in terms of standardizing the front office receipting registers. In the last week, we've actually rolled out receipting solution, which is an integrated cash receipting machine in our Randburg office. We've put in 3 machines at that pilot site. We've also introduced, as the DJ has mentioned, automated cash handling devices. What that device actually does is it transfers the risk of having cash within our offices to the bank. It literally, the cash supervisors literally take those funds, put it in a cash handling device. That cash handling device automatically transacts with the bank and records onto our bank statement. And the bank's responsibility is assumed from the time it is residing, the funds are residing within that machine. The last part of the solution is to interface into BAS. And that three-part interface will address the revenue aspect, the local revenue aspect of the department. Our targets in terms of the current year is to probably hit 56 of our top revenue offices by the end of March this year. The present financial year, the financial year ending March 2009. In terms of BAS, as the members would know, the government is rolling out version 3 of the Standard Chart of Accounts. That's what the SCOA stands for. Version 3, and in terms of BAS, we are still in the process of rolling out BAS to all our offices. Presently, approximately 140 offices that do not have BAS. When the turnaround had started, that figure was approximately 160. So in the year under review, we have implemented BAS in approximately 20 offices. The project commenced with the immigration management services to register and reconcile passenger carrier fines via the penalty case system. This is to do with when an individual comes into the country, should they be issued with a fine, the carrier be issued with that fine, the recording and accounting of those fines within the the basic accounting system. On the foreign revenue agreement, we still have to reach agreement with the Department of Foreign Affairs under National Treasury guidance in terms of how do we account for the revenue, who is responsible for what portion of that process, even though the revenue belongs to the department, because we are not present in all the foreign missions, the accounting thereof is still the responsibility of the DFA, the Department of Foreign Affairs. We are trying to correct that, that state of affairs with National Treasury's help and guidance. In terms of the receiving solution, our long-term plan is to have our receiving solution in all our local offices as well as the foreign missions as well. However, it will, as I said, in terms of the foreign missions, we have to do that in the in consultation with Foreign Affairs. In terms of timeline, at this point in time, we would assume that the local revenue problems should be resolved within the following 18 months, but the foreign revenue within the following 36 months. On page 34, and I refer members also to the annual report in terms of the accounting officer's report, where we had made comments on assets. In terms of assets, several points were raised by the auditor, policy general, in his report. In our accounting officer's report, we have addressed 125 million rand worth of work in progress has been correctly classified. The 11.8 million rand worth of internet charges incorrectly allocated to fixed assets was corrected in the current financial year. The 53 million rand worth of CPI adjustments, inflation adjustments, predominantly on foreign exchange transactions, were associated with the invoices to deal with hardware. What normally happens within the department is that we received an invoice for hardware, so a few months later we received invoices for CPI and forex adjustments on that hardware, and we had to go through a process of linking those foreign transaction invoices as well as CPI adjustments to the base asset, and that has been a process that we had to conclude as well. And also 85 million rand worth of IT related invoices have been matched to the physical assets. The vehicles in terms of the departments, there was an anomaly where certain of our vehicles was recorded on a government garage. That has been corrected as well. In terms of the completeness of the matching of invoices, these are still aspects that we need to do. The IT invoices, IT assets within the department are still a challenge. The department has got large resource in terms of IT spend going back until 1999 when Harness was commissioned. Those assets have been brought on board into our asset register. The asset management policy has been updated. Going forward, we have to maintain our asset register in terms of the existence of our assets, in terms of the location of our assets, and also in terms of the valuation of our assets. We need to embark on training programs for our asset management employees, and this is in line with HR in terms of recruiting suitable asset management employees into the department purely to have custody and oversight over the management of assets throughout the country. It is our intention to perform at this stage two counts in a financial year, one being an interim count and the other being a count done at the end of the financial year. The disposal of assets is also an area where we need to address, and those assets have been earmarked. There is a site in terms of head office and in each of the provinces that has been allocated. We are in the process of going through the normal disposal processes of cleaning the asset register from that point of view. In terms of the maintenance of the lease register, as I said, historically the lease register was limited to lease properties. At the end of December, we intend to have all our leases accounted for comprehensively within the department, and when the interim audit is online, that lease register will be audited in terms of completeness of our leased assets. And as I said, the leased assets cover the IT, the vehicles, and the property items. On slide 37, Government Garage, we are in negotiations with the Auditor General in terms of how to resolve this this issue. As I had said earlier, the department failed to produce 44 pieces of supporting documentation, most of them being petrol slips. After our year end, March 2008, we have appointed additional transport officials throughout the provinces so that we can have stronger monitoring controls over our supporting documentation, including the petrol slips. And like I said, we're working in conjunction with the AG and Government Garage in terms of tightening up all our processes around that. So I'm hopeful that this area will be addressed in the current year under review, in the 8-9 financial year. On slide 38, in terms of payables and classification errors, the payables area that the Auditor General is referring to in their report, the 5 million rand, that amount is a net transaction amount of funds, both revenue and expenditure vouchers, that come from our foreign missions that get analyzed into that suspense account, and that get, once the vouchers are received from Foreign Affairs, get transacted against the correct line items within our budget. The transactions are made up largely of repatriation funds, which goes into the alien accounts, and the others being legitimate expenses that the department incurs on behalf of employees in our foreign missions. So that 5 million rand is what is being referred to under payables, and that's the only area of concern under payables. In terms of the classification error, before I go to that, in terms of National Treasury's involvement in around the relationship between Home Affairs and Foreign Affairs, the process, we have engaged with National Treasury in the form of the Accountant General as to how this process needs to work and where the responsibilities need to lie. In terms of the classification error alluded to in the Auditor General's report, the misposted journals, although it is written as 96 million rands, could not be confirmed. The most likely error in terms of the audit schedule provided to us by the Auditor General is 14 million rand in terms of those transactions. So 14 million rand within that line item is questionable. And that was journals passed where it is legitimate foreign expenses, but it is not related to salaries and allowances. It was related to rent being paid for employees at foreign missions. It was in terms of fax machines, rental on fax machines, and telephone charges and those items. So although it was foreign expenditure, it was not foreign salary-related expenditure. So that was the incorrect misallocation there. To correct that, the journals are being reviewed by senior officials within the organization currently. In terms of slide 39, the cash and cash equivalents, as I alluded to earlier, the department has 38 suspense accounts. Six of these relate to the receipting and deposit-taking accounts that have to do with the cash and cash equivalents. As you would see in the accounting officer's report on page 136, at the end of March, the combined balance of those six accounts were 20.9 million. At the end of August, that balance has reduced to 10.8 million. So progress is being done in terms of that. What we're doing to actually ensure that these items don't only get addressed at year end, we have instituted what I call weekly trial balance meetings, and that is producing a trial balance on a weekly basis and looking at the status of all our balance sheet accounts in terms of clearance of those accounts and in terms of the analyzing the reconciling items within those accounts with specific timelines when these get clear. So that's my initiative going forward in terms of clearing these suspense accounts. And that's it from my side. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Members, you want the break or are you ready for questions? All right, we'll start with Hosimo Ramuzi, Ali. We'll take the first two hands while members are still digesting. And I would believe that members, your analysis of the annual report, which was prepared by the chair in the committee section, and I think there are a number of questions that we have listed there, and I think we should use that document when we engage with the department around this report. So therefore, members, the presentation has been now given by the department, and for members now to begin to engage around the issues. Let me start with Consumer Moshe. Let me start with you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first start by raising a concern, Chairperson, because in terms of parliamentary procedure, we should have received this document a day before. I'm raising it so that Chairperson can follow the procedure. Chairperson, allow me to go direct to page 4. Chairperson, I am inclined by this statement from the DG, which says, Chairperson, we anticipate a continuation of qualified audit unless support is received. Chairperson, after reading this statement, Chairperson, I'm inclined to propose that we request Treasury and the Public Service Act Commission, Chairperson, to intervene as a matter of urgency because of the following reason, Chairperson. The Auditor General have raised a concern with regard to non-compliance with legislation and PFMA and Treasury regulation, and also with regard to Public Service Act, where it talked about officials after they have taken a leave, they're supposed to bring a medical certificate. They don't bring medical certificate, they just go as they wish. And also, Chairperson, under regulation of Public Service Act, Chairperson, they are receiving payments in excess of 30%, which is totally against the public service regulation. And also the Auditor General, Chairperson, raised the question of non-compliance with normal procurement procedure. And the worst part of it, Chairperson, the Auditor General raised the concern of saying the department refused to give the Auditor General documents, the receipt and invoices. And again, Chairperson, non-compliance, the internal control, Chairperson, cannot categorize according to the five components of an effect system of internal control. Chairperson, coming to the matter of governance, the Auditor General, Chairperson, also raised a concern with regard to the audit committee does not operate in accordance with the approved written terms of reference, and also the internal audit function does not operate in terms of approved internal audit plan, and also the internal audit does not function substantially fulfill its responsibility for the year as set out in Treasury regulation. And also the serious concern, Chairperson, the prior external audit recommendation from the Auditor General have not been substantially implemented, and the department did not comply with the regulation 641, which talks about the rollover, Chairperson, where the rollover cannot be more than 5%. But according to the Auditor General, they are making rollovers which are contrary to the law, Chairperson, more than 5% is required by the law. and they are also making this agreement, which was not in accordance with treasury regulations. They make changes to plan performance information without approved by parliament. The law states that if the department wants to make some changes, first chairperson, it must be approved by the portfolio committee and the parliament. And again, chairperson, appropriate steps to collect all monies due to the department. That does not exist, chairperson. A list of assets transferred to other departments, they don't exist. And also the reliable, inadequate fixed asset register for the department, chairperson. After this recent chairperson, I propose that we assist the DG. I'm happy when the DG also raised this concern, chairperson, without assistance from the relevant departments such as Treasury and the Public Service Chairperson. We are going to keep on dishing money to the department without being used properly according to parliamentary procedures, Chairperson. I rest my case.
Yeah, no. Thank you very much, Kosi. What we'll do is that I think we have noted all the issues that you have raised, and Kosi is making a suggestion. That some kind of intervention. We'll want to understand more from the DG on this point, in fact. Now, let me give Charlie, I don't want to take the member's time for now. I'll still come in on my issues. Let me give you Honorable Charlie,
right,
and then followed by the Honorable Camilla and then Bob Kosana. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I'd like to thank you for the DG and the ATMCA for all for this presentation. I have about three questions. First, I found the financial issue start, page 37 for the presentation. Paragraph 2 is Department failed to produce 44 pieces of supporting documentation, mostly of petrol slips. I want to know this 44 invoice for this this document. It's what total amount? How much for this 44? You can't get the result because if from the Auditor General this report inside is the government garage. It's 2,775.9 million. But for CFO you issue for this bigger challenge. So from the government garage, it is. I just want to know 44 piece. This documentation. What this and how much for total? Then.
Yeah.
Yes.
Then
then now we come back, coming to the page 34. This page 34, you have the 125 million for the working in progress has been corrected. You say it correctly, but if from the Auditor General report from the page 140, the note is 14. You can see there is unhappy for the your documentation. I was unable to satisfy myself as the classification. This occurrence. For there is a 99.41 million, including the in order the loan pension able allowance is 198.9 million. So you say from your presentation you say you already correct, but from Auditor General you say he maybe not correct. So I want to know what happened with this. Then now we come into the DG's page. It's page 14. From the DG presentation, yeah, it's paragraph, I think it's the number 4, it's a single courier service for the IT project transformation. For your presentation, it's a single courier service was put in place to pick up
and the drop of the ID application and the complete ID book.
I want to know this one. You want Korea to service the whole country for the only for the head office. Then read this one. I want to know why it's only for single Korea. And can service all the this quite big amount for the everyday you for, from the York department. This is a very, very messy job. I think the first time I get these three questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And maybe one should say or share the same sentiment as other two honorable members have already said about the department for coming and present this report before us. I just want to comment, Chair, on page 2 of the slides in the paper, in the document being presented by the department. Chair, one would say, when you look at the Auditor General's report and the department's annual report, one would say you may find both the good and the bad. And when you look at the turnaround strategy that the department has embarked on, one would agree again, as far as this document is concerned, some intended objectives in terms of the turnaround strategy has been achieved. Therefore, Chair, I just want to know from the department, especially from that bullet number 2 under introduction, does it suggest that the AG has deliberately ignored some facts which has been raised from the document and again from the Auditor General's report? If there are facts which are, for instance, to me, there are conflicting facts, and you read this document and again you go back to the AG's report. And Chairperson, in the presentation of the CFO, I heard you asking him as to whether he's still acting. Because to me, this is creating a problem to this department. If indeed we are having a number of vacancies which are not yet being filled, and today we are coming with a CFO who is not yet been employed on a permanent basis with his special skills in this department, anyone can handpick him at any given time. Therefore, it says it poses a very serious challenge, again, in terms of vacancies to the department's chair. Now, I just wanted to know as to how long did he act in this position, because anyone is looking for him out there. Chair, I think I'm going to rest my case. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, well, maybe one might appreciate to see the department in front of us with this annual report today. But one, it's wondering whether the report that we are continuously receiving, and then we are told that it is a working process. One, is it because of insufficient staff in the department having too many vacancies, or it is because of the management of the department is taking advantage of the problems which are in the department? Can we also maybe make one example? Why didn't the department manage to implement a basic online monthly and quarterly report? And because of, you have set yourself that standard, but you couldn't actually do that. And then in some other instances, we then say we are going to go and make some work as a department in various provinces. But then, when you look, if one can ask a question, did the department manage to establish a monitoring mechanism for fraud and corruption in all provinces? Because of that was the objective of the department before. And probably they will tell us that they have managed to do X number of provinces, and then they were unable to can do this because of the capacity within the department. It might be also taking us into in that line. But the information that we are getting, as Charlie have made an indication. Yes. As a member here, Charlie, Honorable Charlie has made a reference here. Of surely, if you are telling us that you are only looking at about 44 slips, but then you look at the amount of 77.79 million. But then you are referring to only 44 slips. And then the issue of government garage, I think we have been raising this issue for the past 5 years. And now every time we will be told, maybe it is because of this and then it is because of this. Can we get a clear explanation that are we forging ahead? Are we able to manage this thing? Because of this in itself, it shows that we are unable to can manage the funds of the department. Except. And then the proposal here to say, why can't we maybe take a leaf and give the finances of the Department of Home Affairs to be run by Treasury? Maybe we might maybe get a different a result, and then we must have this management and this whole thing sort out their own problems, and then if they are ready, then they will then come into the department and work for the department. Thank you.
Governor, before we take the second round of questions, we'll get the response. In the department, we have the turnaround team. That was identified, deployed. It's almost, if I'm not wrong, it's almost 2 years now. It's almost a year now.
They started in June.
It's almost a year now.
So June to June, and then July,
16 months. 16 months. And then they came in because of the same problems that we identified, and the committee supported the minister when she called for the intervention of the Treasury then in the first disclaimer that led to the deployment of the Treasury and the DPSA. It then identified all those challenges in the department. They started to work on some of the issues. And the annual report then came out with was a qualified report. We went back to a disclaimer. This is the third disclaimer that we're having in the department. Now, we have, in the current financial year, we have allocated over quarter of a billion to the turnaround team. And if you look at what we have spent now, almost R1 billion that has been spent on the turnaround. Because if you look at what we have allocated in the last 1.5 years, it's quite a huge amount of money that we have put for them to help in turning around the department before the coming of the DGA. You see, my biggest concern is that the issues that Dr. General has raised are issues that, correct as the DG puts it, are issues that have been there,
That's why we receive all these disclaimers from along. I just want to deal with a few issues before the DG comes in with the response to a number of things. I want to look at the non-compliant with legislation, maybe a PFMA, treasury regulations, and all of that. I got about 14 points of non-compliant with legislation. Quite very long, DG. To start to go through all of them. It will take us almost the whole day. Section 43.3 of the PFMA required the department to report to the executive authority about utilization of savings within 7 days, but the department did not report. Section 40(4)(c) required the accounting officer to submit to the relevant treasury and to the executive authority monthly report within 15 days of the end of the month, but the accounting officer did not report. The accounting officer did not provide any evidence that the department had complied with Section 38(1)(j) of PFMA, which required that the accounting officer must, before transferring the funds, obtain written assurance from the entity that the entity implement effective, efficient, and transparent financial management and internal control system. The accounting officer did not ensure that the department had, if I can go through quite a number of this non-compliant of legislation. If you look at the strategic objective of the department, the 3-year, 5-year mission, that the department has set itself to achieve. 5-year strategic outlook focused on the following. There are quite a number of things that we have listed. Clearly, a number of things have been achieved on around, you know, the turnaround time on IT book. The problem that we have, the control of the resources and assets of the department. That's one of the biggest problems that we are faced with. Much, you know, your call center, turnaround time on ID, that is being acknowledged and appreciated. An area where we deal with directly, you know, which Parliament has that responsibility of allocating these resources and expect you to come and account. It seems to me that it's one of the most problem areas that we are not able to win. Hence, members of the committee are making the suggestion. So, yes, let's hear yourself, because even when I look at the issues that you raised, there are a number of things that you have raised in the presentation which are not covered, in fact, in the annual report. And I don't know, we may want to go through all of those issues that are not covered in the annual report. The reason why they are not raised in the annual report, but they are raised in the presentation, there are quite a number of them. So it's a quite the situation that DG, honestly, let us look at it and sort of agree as to what will be really the solution to this problem. Already members are making a particular proposal, and the DG is trying your level best to really move the department out of this. In your input, when you came in, the promise that we got from you was that we'll get a better report. We don't expect to get this thing. Definitely so. Now, with the support that we have, DG, and the allocation that we pay as Parliament to that support that we have given you, and that support is unable to change. You have the fever tree in place that's supposed to be helping the department to really come up. But it has gone back to where it was before, and it's a fact. So I think we need to really engage around those issues, DG. We'll come back again and raise a number of things that we have set up to achieve yourself in our strategic document, and then we'll look at those issues. But for now, I think let us maybe begin to respond to these issues. But let us come to some kind of an understanding as to how to move out of this particular problem. It's a very serious problem. I think it's reflecting very bad on the department. We have seen department going through, you know, disclaimers, but not to this extent. Consistently every year, we're going backwards. In fact, we're not able to achieve the things that we have set up to achieve. So I think they're very well informed. We have engaged with the Auditor General yesterday, and he was saying that himself that you'll agree with the committee's view that maybe we would need more assistance. But with the current assistance that we have, why we are not able to change it? The turnaround team that is there, what is available? Because they're supposed to be helping you dealing with these issues on a daily basis. They're supposed to be a pillar of strength in addressing internal controls, especially. And it seems we're not moving. And we just want to understand this issue. If they make sense to you when they are there, do they make impact? If not, obvious, we'll have to review that. And then another thing is that they cannot hear. One of the things we're discussing, even from the NC study group, was that we need at some point to have them come and explain themselves. We have turned around SARS. It was wonderful when they came in. But SARS has been turned around and everybody's heard about what they see, what SARS has done. What's the problem with Home Affairs? They came in with a disclaimer, and we are still sitting with them with another disclaimer again. But what is the problem? And we want to hear you how you relate with them. Within the department, your engagement with them, how to identify this objective that you have set yourself. Because all these issues that Mr. General has said, has raised them, are things that you have set yourself that these are things that I'm going to deal with in your strategic plan. Internal controls and all of those, these are things that you said you're going to deal with in your strategic plan. So I think already members have raised their concerns and they've raised questions already. And let us then begin to open up this engagement and see how far we'll go.
So can we start off? Yeah, DJ, you're
on the floor. Thank you, Chair. My request to distribute the questions among the members, but I'll tackle most of them. The first question was raised by Honorable Hoshi. And they related to issues that are outlined there. I think what must be understood is really, I can't have a different word but work in progress. I started off by saying that the people who could have made any changes at all started in 5 months to before the end of the financial year. When you have a CFO who is responsible or who has presided over the previous audit reports in place, because you can't do anything until they are not in place. That is a constraint. When you can't have the officer that you can charge with the responsibility of doing certain things, that ties you up. It's just a fact. Effectively, we did not start addressing the financial side of our problems until really we had Seglan in position in November. Attempts were being made, but we're dealing with the same players all the time. And I hope it's appreciated that you don't overrule them by appointing other people when they still occupy the position. And you do not rush off and say, because you failed us in the five previous years, you are therefore not going to be a part. You are either expelled or suspended. You've got to come up with a case for that. It is a requirement of our Labor Relations Act that we act a little carefully when we deal with things of that nature. But just to address also the issue of the person acting up to now. The person is acting because the case of the suspension is not finished. There is nothing we can do about fast-tracking that. It's outside the hands of the department. And it would be, constructive dismissal to appoint a person in a place when the incumbent is still going through a case which they may win, they hope to, and which they may not win. Until such a process is finished, you cannot appoint definitive people in the position. I think that would be the answer.
But did you, at that point, you remember the promise you have given to the committee was that this matter will be dealt with within 3 months. And obviously, I don't know, the concern may be that you underestimated that you know, the case may be severe, whatever. We don't even know what that is. But the commitment that we made to Parliament was that this case within 3 months it will be done. It's almost a year now. So we are still at home, and it seems that we are still going to end this financial year without having resolved maybe this case. I'm not sure how far are we with regard to that. I'm not one to discuss it, but it's a worrying factor in terms of that. We cannot operate in a manner that we have in 18 months and almost a year now. We are not able to resolve it. Beyond our control, I know that BP, but it's a very serious concern.
Chair, if that's what I said, I would absolutely admit that I seriously underestimated the time it would take. But once it's, you've got lawyers acting for an employee and lawyers acting for, they will haggle back and forth. I think it will be understood by all that we would love to bring this to finality, whichever way it went, because we are indeed paying somebody who, for over a year it will be now, whose case has not been resolved. I couldn't issue a directive and say suspend the case, this is how we want to deal with it. You just cannot do that. However much one wishes to do it, it's not possible to do it. It's not allowed. I clearly did not expect that it would take this long, but I reckoned without the provisions and of the Labour Relations Act and how people make use of that to defend their interests. I'm sorry about that, Chair. I must also go into the issue of a promise not to have another disclaimer when I came in. Again, I will say I reckoned without the bureaucratic requirements of government services. The restructuring that we are talking about is an exercise that we launched almost as soon as we had identified the problems and done the survey that one is talking about. Once you make such a major restructuring, you cannot implement it without first consulting DPSA. And when you consult them, they don't necessarily, and that would have taken an elaboration of your new vision, your new structure. You go back and forth with them. They disagree sometimes with the way you propose certain factors. But when you change the top three layers in any department, you have to consult the Department of Public Service and Administration. And it's a matter of historical reasons that I tell the honorable members here. Took no less than 2 months. And until that happens, to answer yet another question, you cannot fill certain very many of the positions that remain vacant. We have only just been able to go last week into full-scale advertising. After consulting with the union, it was a process that was long, much longer than one would have expected, but a process which, if we hadn't undertaken, would have led the department to even more serious risks. So we consulted with the unions. It does take its own time. It takes two to this arrangement. And when that is finally achieved, and one is very grateful that we achieved all the objectives that we intended, time had passed. Now, with respect to the senior management service group, again, you had to, if you were changing positions, substantially, as happened in many cases, where a position that, a post that somebody occupies changes, you have to approach the person and get their agreement that this position has changed and you agree to reapply for that. Or if it hasn't changed, as in some cases, you then agree that they may migrate into the new arrangement. I'm just saying all these things, most unfortunately, are a product of time. I think we should be judged on the basis of what can be achieved in a given period of time. It's very frustrating, Chair and Honourable Member. I don't know if you brought in National Treasury, quite frankly, very sincerely, that they would do it any better. I really, really have my serious doubts, but the invitation, if the committee so decides, could be welcome. because a lot of the things that have not been done because of the processes that one has to follow. I thought there would be no disclaimer, Chair. When I accepted this position, it was on the understanding that it would be possible to go to the open market and get certain people, four or five, I think that's in the record, so that we could proceed with turning the department around. It turns out that we are not a SARS, and this was made absolutely clear by the Minister of Public Service and Administration, that we are a department and not an entity like SARS, which is a state-owned entity, and therefore none of the fundamental restructuring that was proposed, suddenly to get people, pay them whatever it took to pay them, and I'm talking about line management people. Your advisors, your consultants can only go this far, and they've been extremely good in process re-engineering. They cannot give commands and instructions to people who are online. So what happened? IT person should have been a person you'd go, you'd get from outside, and they don't come at salaries that are even cheaper than what is paid to the DG. Clearly, the service structure, in spite of the commitments that one was given, that it could be done. Unless you put them, you hire them and deploy them as consultants, we already had consultants, you are just not going to get that move forward. Believe you me, when you manage civil servants, they know who has the authority to give instructions, and they know who has no authority to do that. So anybody who suggests and recommends and does not actually enforce has got very, very serious limitations. These are really some of the real problems that we're to deal with, Chair. SARS, Minister, as I said, Geraldine Fraser-Moleketi, said the department is not a SARS. You cannot use the formula that was used at SARS. They are a small remove from the government problem. So
this is my problem. Because you see, you correctly, when you came in, you had this idea of really, you know, a turning the department seriously with that understanding that we had. And this thing is, I think it has taken you backwards now. That is why we should deal with this problem. It means that, and looking at the capacity that we have currently in the department, it's clear that it's going to take you some time to really arrive at something better from what we have now. Because you are like, you know, held back now. You can't solve anything outside. The only thing that is going to happen, DG, is that you're going to end up running a department with consultants throughout. You do not have a capacity within the department. Those are specialized skills, DG, what consultants bring to the department. Those are very specialized skills. So you're going to be running with them first year, second year, third year, throughout. The department is going to be running with consultants. Because clearly, with the capacity you have from the public service and what you want to achieve may not be achieved from the public service. Either the call that we are making, DG, because I'm worried that we'll definitely want to engage, you know, on the details of all of these issues, and members have been raised all of this. Maybe the call that members are making is the correct call. That says, as much as you wanted to do these things, and you are told that this is not SARS, this is a department that needs to operate within the public service. Because if you look at the intervention task team that was deployed, it's the one that identified issues that we are dealing with now, the foundation of dealing with the problem of innocence. It means that capacity was deployed within government from public service and treasury. And the concern that I raised then was that when these people who have identified this problem, who have started to work on these issues, when they leave, what's going to happen? And it collapses back to zero again. So either it will be right to make this call that the members have proposed. I don't want to close this thing. I know that we still have to further engage on the number of things that we have identified and what members proposed. Maybe there's a need that we start to engage around this point that Husi has made. Public service as a support department to come in. Treasury to come in. As they do that, you need to build capacity. Because my worry is that, again, consultants are coming as a price member. We've just spoken about Fever Tree, that we are spending quite a huge amount of money. They're coming as a price consultant. Does the state have that resource to run the department with consultants? Within that deployment of public safety, we have seen a lot of improvement. That is why the report of that financial year was quite a qualified report than a claim because of that impact that they've made. So, but it's up to members as we engage. As the DG says, you know, you want to get more support, and we don't want to see the DG failing in what he has said he wants to achieve. He has set up a wonderful program that all of us believe that if this program is given support, this program will definitely turn around the department. So what support do we give ourselves? Because correctly, in that point that the DG raises, causes that you have identified, that because of the support, we need to identify in which way we help the department to be able to be one of the best departments. This department is quite very key to this country. This department deals with the security of this country. Everything that lives, that moves in this country depends on Home Affairs. And if Home Affairs collapses, we don't have a country. Currently, we're sitting with over 5 million illegal immigrants in the country. Whom we cannot even register people, struggling day in, day out to try and register people. There. 5 million in a 47 million citizen, a quarter of the population that is undocumented. What does it say about the security of the country? Something that will not allow this department to collapse in our hands. We'll never allow it. We'll need to come up with ways and means of how best we support the Department of Home Affairs to be able to deal with its mandate. And I think we are beginning to get there. It's unfortunate that the executive is not here at DG. That's why I was saying that, you know, it was going to be nice that some of the issues that we want to raise will raise them in front of the executive and to hear what the executive's response will be. You know, because we may want to really engage with you, DG, but we are limited how far we can go with you. You know. So, but I think let us really deal with the issues as we see them, but let us conclude somehow as a committee of parliament to say what is the intervention that is needed in this situation. Because this camera is not just a simple thing. And when I was talking to the DG when he came in, he said, hey, you know what, we have stepped again, you know. And he understands, you know, the nature of the disclaimer and what does it mean. When we engaged the Auditor General again, it was like, I know that the officials from Treasury in the meeting here, and I hope that they're listening and they're noting some of the issues that you are raising. So there's a need, Coach, as you proposed another member, that let us look at what kind of an intervention that is needed. We have said we have the turnaround team, and that turnaround team, consultants who are there, but clearly we don't see much impact that is being done to deal with the challenges that that the department has sort of is dealing with every day. And the DG is back now. Because when he came in, I remember the first meeting that what intervention was going to do. And he was then stopped when public safety says, no, you can't. And I think, DG, that was a knock to you, a very serious knock. So let us sort of look at that particular approach that we want to come in as the department. It must move forward. It must. It's one department. You know how serious is this department? You look at the current Zimbabwean situation where they are, you know, they struggle over position. And one department that ZANU-PF is holding on and can't let go, it's almost like, can't let go. Because they understand the centrality of this department. Because if this department fails you, you don't have a country. So, but that's fine. Let us hear without really having stopped you when you are still responding. I think the concern from the chair, which I'm, you know, conveying what the feeling of the portfolio committee around all of these issues. So let us try, engage, but back in our mind, remember, is what we have already raised. That must come to some kind of a conclusion when we finish this meeting. To say, our belief is that this is what we think is right to help the department be able to move forward. We want you to win, DG. We have so much belief in what we have said we want to achieve, and that will change the department. And as Parliament, we have that responsibility of making sure that we give you the necessary support to achieve what you want to achieve, as much as we pass the budget.
No, thanks very much, Chair. I really appreciate the comments and the concerns of the committee. I guess some of the options that would have been available if the plan that one envisaged when one came in could not be implemented, the option would be go away because you failed. I think we are dealing in a matter that's a little more complex than that. It's not like a private sector organization where if you don't give me this, then I'm out. It's a commitment that one must evaluate very carefully. If the withdrawal assists, that's one of the first things that one would do. Withdraw and get better organization, better people to do these things. Absolutely. No doubt about that. I think there are easier jobs elsewhere to do. Building an organization is not a matter that you achieve overnight, particularly an organization that has had very, very many years of difficulties. I want to be careful all the time and not blame my predecessors, but there is no doubt, as known by the committee, that the department has been struggling for quite some time. You're not ever going to turn it around now that one is wiser in a short period of time. For the committee members, visit offices and see attitudes, and you wish you could say, change your attitude and people change. It doesn't happen like that. But I would like to request that we be not too pessimistic. What I indicated was that a lot of the changes started very late in the year under review, and that is effect. Until those changes happened, all the observations that had been made could not be commenced seriously. I want to also point out that the support team, the support intervention team, by the way, I think merely pointed things out. They never really managed anything. So they could not have done anything to improve the functioning of the department at all. If there was a reprieve from a disclaimer, I can't remember. I don't know if this is a successive disclaimer, second year running. They pointed out what the ills were. And once you get in there, you don't pick that up and say, you've pointed this out and therefore I'm implementing it tomorrow. You still need to make an independent assessment, no doubt assisted by those findings. But Chair, I want to say if there is a better proposal, we certainly will support it because in the end, it's the success of the department. Let's make sure that when we propose alternatives or other alternatives, that they actually succeed, that we don't miss out on the key element for why we have not been where we're supposed to be. I want to indicate that the consultants, I wish they cost a little less, have done a good job in process re-engineering. I think the fact that an ID is produced in a shorter period of time consistently is thanks to the strategies, the knowledge they have, which they have passed on to the department. We made sure that the consultants have been used optimally in the department. They did not sit on one side, come out with strategies and pass them on to the department. We had a structure that had ownership right from the beginning. Bomkize are coming where they are today because they are co-responsible with a consultant on a stream that relates to civics work. So when we get reports now from the work of the stream, it's no longer what used to happen in the beginning, where first you had consultants reporting. We changed that. We said our own people in the department must report on these things. Otherwise, how long is this hand-holding? I know it's not a name that's liked very much here, going to continue. So I think over time, over the past few months, people have taken responsibility if we are to come before the committee and present progress on the turnaround. There is no better information than would come from the Home Affairs people who are co-sponsors of the work that is taking place. So the strategy for hand-holding, for passing the information, I think is in place and working very well. Started a bit late. I would like to say also what we did to bridge the knowledge, the skills gap, and this did not come out in the manner that had been anticipated when one started talking about myself, but we have, as of a few months back, been able to get a group of people called the Management Leadership Support who are hired into the department. They are not part of the consultants. Over a fixed period of time, not more than 6 months, in which to pass their knowledge, their skills to the senior people in the department. It works. I think it's working not too badly. In the circumstances where the department is where it is, where it can be a SARS, I think we have, to the best of my knowledge, the best, I think, a good formula. Let me also say that the people in the department who are acting in the positions of leadership in civics and in immigration are actually, once we appoint them, will prove to be good people. You know, either bring in people from outside, let them be for 3 years, pay them whatever it takes, and then get them out, because we're not going to continue like this as a department on artificial salaries. But when that option was not available, then what we needed to do was to develop from within. And developing from within does take time. I am really very encouraged by the persons who will be appointed to these positions when the time comes. This is good material. They have the benefit of knowing the organization from a few years of being with it. They have the benefit of having worked with the consultants, and they have the benefit of a commitment and eagerness to perform and change things that have not worked well over the past. I would say I invest quite a bit of confidence in these people, and they will, in the fullness of time, provide these things. Now, but if there is a better way, honestly, let it be. In the end, we are about results. I think results are achieved in time. We must just bear that in mind when we make alternative proposals, that no one, and I mean no one, not from Treasury, not from anywhere, is going to come and turn this thing around in a much shorter period of time. Let's be careful about how we use the resources. So that's about that. We would support what the committee suggests, but we would really caution very, very strongly that you're not going to get instant results. There is just too much that went wrong over a long period of time, and it can only be fixed within the environment, within the constraint of what the Labor Relations Act requires. I do want to, I can't resist making a comment on the number of people who are inside here. They are really not as a result of our immigration services failing. The asylum seekers who come in are being processed much faster now. They should be processed even faster. But if there are 5 million illegal people here, if we have that number, more than 70% of them have absolutely no interest in going to Home Affairs because they don't want to belong to be here. So they would have come into this country through their own means and would not want to surrender themselves to Home Affairs. And Home Affairs, as we all know, does not police the borders to prevent them from coming in. I think so. Okay, there are very many other specific questions. I think on the broad brush of where do we go from here, I would say give what's going on in the department a chance, but if you feel that it's just taking too long or the resources don't exist, that the structure, the civil service regulations do not permit a meaningful restructuring of the department, I think we could look at that. I thank you very much for your contribution.
You still to respond to some questions raised by members, so that we can sort of come to some end of the argument today.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG. to put the audit into context, as the DG has correctly said, most of the initiatives started within the year under review. The audit covered the period from 1 April 2007 until 31st of March 2008. And in terms of audit, in terms of the rule, even if something is non-compliant in April, they have to report it at the end of March. Mm-hmm. If it's on an isolated example, they still have to report it. Examples that were cited in terms of not making the quarterly date or the monthly date by the 15th. If the report was issued on the 16th, or signed off by the DG or the executive on the 16th, that singular issue, or even if it occurred twice within an annual space of time, is still reported. When we had engaged the Auditor General on that, we were advised that it's a reporting standard, and they had to report without the context. So what we sought to do was to bring in the context of the findings within the report of the accounting officer. Hence, there seems to be a conflict between what is the factual at the end of March basis, which is an auditor's report, and the answering of the questions in the accounting officer's report. The accounting officer's report gives you leeway to talk right until the time the accounting officer actually signs his report, which, as can be seen, was dated on the 31st of August. Hence, we could show the progress made until that time. So it's not really, it gives a perception of a conflict, but actually it's not a conflict. In terms of some of the other issues raised by Member Khosi, the salaries being 30%, what is not said here is that that is isolated to our security guard. It's not as if 7,600 employees within the department get paid 30% overtime, as an example. It's limited to the security guard within the department, and for that we have special dispensation. In other aspects, in terms of member Charlie, the 44 pieces of paper, if I can talk to paragraph 13 on page 140 of the report, of the annual report, it reads as follows: I was therefore unable to obtain sufficient information to verify the current accuracy of the government garage expenditure amounting to 76.790 million. That is the total that we as a department paid to government garage. In terms of how auditing works, it works on a sample basis. The average line item in that 76 million is not higher than 3,000 rand. So it's made up of small amounts, the maximum of which is 3,000 rand. What the auditors do, they draw a sample, and out of that sample, 44 pieces of paper could not be provided. Now, in that case, they say the 44 pieces, which totaled approximately 3,000 to 4,000 rand of the total sample, could not be produced, hence the sample failed. And if the sample failed, they say the whole balance failed. that context is not brought into the audit report. So I think there needs to be an understanding, especially when the committee members engage with the auditors, to request that contextualization from them in terms of the actual facts. In terms of paragraph 14, where Member Charlie was talking about the 99 million rand, here again, the balance in the trial balance is 99 million. However, the most likely error from the sampling methodology says about 14 million rand is incorrect within the 99 million, but it's not reported like that. Hence, when I say there's a 14 million rand error within that 99, it seems to be a conflict. But we've got schedules that have been signed off between the department and the Auditor General that says this is the most likely difference in that balance. The other areas, in terms of the 125, I think I explained that. At the end of March, within our asset register, we had shown 125 million as work in progress. As we had progressed during that time and until the end of August, we had resolved that 125, but the auditors reported at the end of March. Hence, in their report, it still stood. So they did not report in terms of positively, which is a reporting standard that we were told that they do not report against. So we had to do those aspects. In terms of the non-compliance issues, there are several issues with non-compliance. And most of the non-compliance, like I said, covers the whole 12 months under review, from the 1st of April until the end of March 2008, in terms of the year under review. And if non-compliance, as an example, bank reconciliations are not performed daily, what most departments do, and we're going to do it as well, it is practically impossible to do this recon daily. What happens is an exemption is requested from National Treasury, which gets granted. However, if you grant it midstream, there's still a portion of the year that says, under that portion, it was not done daily, and the rest of the year, you were granted an exemption, so therefore you comply with these regulations. That is the approach in terms of the practical aspects that we would have to engage National Treasury in doing as well. A further example, payments in excess of 2,000 rand were not effected electronically by National Treasury. That within the department was done once, in the amount of 8,000 rand. The fact that it was done is incorrect, which is true. The fact that it becomes a non-compliance issue has to be reported. Hence, the auditors say that under the Treasury regulation, in terms of how the report is drafted, it does not lead to the qualification of the report, but it arises under the paragraph on page 140 of the report under emphasis of matter. So they would like to draw attention to these aspects, saying it doesn't influence the opinion, but it is areas of legislation that need to be tightened up on. And whether you miss it once or 10 times, they still have to report on it. So I think that balance needs to be brought in as well. I think, by and large, yeah, I think I've covered most of the issues that were raised. I think we've answered your question in terms of my availability and acting position. I've been acting for almost a year.
Chair, can I just supplement? Just one little point. The question was asked about the contradiction between what the AG says and ourselves. The annual report, page 142, paragraph 23, where it says progress on the turnaround strategy. I think in light of what the Chair is saying, serious matter. The department had embarked on a turnaround strategy to address the key weaknesses as identified from the support intervention report. Management has progressed in resolving through this process many of the previously reported items. And although these have not been finalized, significant progress has occurred, and this will be subject to review in the next reporting period. The detail on the progress of the turnaround is included in pages on the accounting officer. Again, to say with humility that an audit is a snapshot of what is taking place at a given time. Auditor is not going to say in his report that they did a wonderful job in the 5 months, and during that period, we haven't found anything. They are looking at the period as a whole and saying, during that period, these are the things that didn't happen.
then we are coming to claim to yourself that all of these things, or the vast majority of them, are things that happened before. We could pay attention to it. Really, is not a matter in the interest of any audit, because it tells the facts as they are. If it's not complete, it's not complete. But I think we need, as an authority that supervises the work, to look at whether there is progress or not. And if there is no progress, then alternative solutions can be solved. Thank you.
Okay. Members, could you want to...
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to remind the department that there is no new official in government. If you have been appointed to that post, you are responsible to that post. Secondly, Chairperson, in terms of PFMA, an official Chairperson who is responsible for the finances, if he failed in terms of Section 38 of PFMA, Chairperson, he's supposed to be charged. No one is being charged. That's why they keep on getting disclaimers after disclaimers. And I still stand by my ways, Chairperson, of proposing that recommend for the intervention to assist the department, Chairperson.
Wendy, followed by
Chair, I just want maybe to make a follow-up in relation to what the DG has just said and the FCO has just said. In all the departments, I hope there is an internal audit. For instance, you have just explicitly tried to present to us what an audit is in a real sense. But if I can just be clarified as to whether your internal audit is at a functional stage or whatever. Because to me, it would be saying to, whenever the AG is looking for this document, if that body within the department is functional, I should think all the proper documents that you've been trying to clarify us about, and in terms of how the AG should operate when he comes to do his work, this would be in place by then. And again, DG, I should think I must make a follow-up on this issue of vacancies. I was asking that question of his acting in regard to a number of vacancies which are there in the department. Because this, at the end of the day, that doesn't reflect me as an honorable member, or doesn't even reflect the minister as an accounting officer number one in the department. It says to you there is a lack of stewardship, and again, there is a lack of leadership. One can interpret it like that. But I just mentioned this point. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the Auditor General yesterday was saying that during the time of the audit, there were some documents that he could not find with a fixed asset register. There was nothing there. Now, I just want to know, because here on page 33, the plan that was taken was that to transfer money whenever it gets into it gets banked from the office. What I want to know is that when that money goes to the bank, does it stay? To what does it belong to? Because I think this is also one of the things that are happening. When they are supposed to account for it, then a person doesn't know what it is for. Thank you, sir. Thank you. My first question is with regard to the aliens account. I did not hear any mention of the aliens account. If do we still have that, or we no longer have it? My other question is with regard to the banking policy, because the Auditor General has stated that there is no formal policy with regard to the banking policy. I just wanted to find out as to when will the department do that, so that you know, we comply with the PFMA. And also with all the PFA compliance that the Auditor General has raised, when can we see improvements on that? And with regard to the issue of the government garage, we always say, let me say, every year we raise this issue of the department and the government garage as to whether will we have an agreement between the government garage and the department, so that we don't find ourselves, you know, doing wrong things instead of doing what is expected of us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, among other important work which the department has committed itself in doing in 2007, 2008, it is the vetting of a total of 192 employees for that financial year. But I think they have managed to work only on 83 of its employees. Could we maybe get the reason why couldn't they do even 50% of what they promised they would do? Thank you.
Those were the last, I think, questions. What we'll do, okay, that's fine. Let's respond to them very briefly and then come to some kind of a closure on the presentation, and then we can move to another agenda item. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. If I can take the first question on the fixed asset register and the documentation around that. When we had done the asset take, we went throughout the country, barcoding all the assets and doing an asset count of every single piece of equipment that belongs to the department at all of our sites. That was the first initiative. The second initiative was to go back within our archives and extract all the invoices relating to assets, right, that corresponded into VAT over multiple years. The third aspect was to match those invoices to those assets that we found. Now, in the department's history, when the department moved from Civitas building to the present location of Waterloo, certain documentation went missing, amongst which was asset invoices. In National Treasury, in the form of the Accountant General, has issued a practice note to say that from 2002-3 time frame, there is a fair value process that can be adopted by departments in terms of complying with an asset register. So, where a department does not have documentation, you can do a process of fair valuing your assets to arrive at a value for that, and that's what we have done. However, in issuing that practice note, there's also a Treasury regulation that says departments have to keep documentation for 5 years, a minimum of 5 years. Now, those two contradicted in the sense that a fair valuation exercise was done, but the supporting documentation was not there. Now, the practice note given by the accounting officer was precisely to overcome the issue where supporting documentation was not available. So we did our exercise, asset take exercise, in compliance with the Accountant General's practice notes. So, so hence that made up for the cover of invoices that were not available. The report does not, if you're reading of the report, the assets that are being, or the amounts that are being referred to, are not referring to amounts in the current year or in the previous year. They're actually referring to assets that were bought over the last 5 years, but not in the current year under review and the previous financial year, because those 2 years, we had all the documentation. But those previous, the initial 3 years, there was gaps within that. Okay. In terms of revenue, you had referred to the, on the slide, reference is made to slide 33 in terms of the cash handling devices. The thinking around our receiving solution is that all our transactions, there are 65 of them that the department services produces. Each of them tells us exactly how many that we're piloting now, how many enabling documents for whatever it is, an ID, a passport, a visa, whatever it is, have been issued. And if you do the cross-cost, saying 10 IDs at 15 Rand will give us 160 Rand, that then gets banked into the cash handling. So that analysis is there, but that only started now in October. Previously, it was dependent upon manual systems in terms of a cash register that had a tilt slip. But the tilt slip just gave you amounts, it didn't tell you what it was for. So so that we covered now going forward, but we're still in the process of rolling that out. As we stand now, we've only done this in one office. We're piloting in one office. So we're planning to roll out, like I had said, locally over the next 18 months to actually do that. And the analysis of that revenue will be better, and we'll be in a better position to track front office services to back office production for the first time in the department now. But those benefits only come in the future. In terms of... the honourable member, in terms of the aliens account. The aliens account in the presentation, we refer to it as the immigration account. And the immigration account is disclosed in the annual report on pages 187 to 196. However, as I had said, the auditors did not audit that. They did not complete the audit of that. But we have produced, we've analysed 10 years of financial data and produced financial statements for the last 5 years. So I've covered your question there. In terms of the banking policy, the banking policy broadly within government is set by National Treasury in terms of the banking mandate and the regulations, and that is what the department has utilized within the department. However, there is an obligation for the department to internalize that banking policy. What the department has failed to do is to tailor that banking mandate into a policy for the department and just formalize that, because the department cannot operate a banking policy outside the regulations set by National Treasury. So it's just a matter of adopting that policy and localizing it for the department. You will see in the report there's also reference being made to a policy to write off debt. In the year under review, there was a policy, but the policy was not approved by Exco or management. This year, that policy has been approved. In terms of your question regarding access to compliance, like I had said, the compliance issues are various. It's compliance to legislation in terms of PFMA, in terms of trade regulation, in terms of the Supply Management Framework Act, in terms of the PPP Act as well. And in terms of that, we are putting in process. Obviously, the first part would be a checklist to see where we have complied, where we have not complied, and firm up the controls around those compliance. However, like I had said, whether we do not comply in one instance or 10 instances on a particular line item, the Auditor General will report on those. We hope to address what we can retrospectively if we are able to in terms of those compliance issues. The agreement between Government Garage and DHA, what I have instituted presently is all the payments thus far that we have made to Government Garage. We have got all the electronic documents based on the ELS system. The ELS system is an internal electronic system that is used by government garage. It's a custom-made specific system in government garage that interfaces into the various departments, into banks. That system produces an electronic invoice. It produces an electronic schedule per line item of that invoice that we have got. What we do not have, and this is where we're trying to get agreement with them on, is the supporting documentation that they use to raise and to capture the information on ELS. That's what we're getting copies of. Because within the department, the information goes directly from our officials, in terms of our transfer officials, in terms of the transport books, directly to government garage, and we have got that information. So going back, we're re-engineering the process. What we have found in the department is that as we're turning the department around, most of our dependencies is based on the vacancies. Because you can redesign processes and policies, but if you do not have people to transfer those skills to or to actually manage the process going forward, you have got very good processes with no effect on the ground. What we're doing thus far, and until HR actually does that, and the DG alluded to in terms of what that process is, until we have those warm bodies in place at the respective points of presence, we're going to have to re-engineer the paperwork, and that's what we're doing at the moment. So tacitly, I've got an agreement with Government Garage going forward on that. I'm also trying to get an agreement in terms of the AG to at least understand from an auditing point of view, is it absolutely necessary to keep petrol slips? Because it's a burden. It really is. In terms of a piece of paper that's about 6 inches long that fades within a 10-month period of time, we've been advised to make photocopies of everything. Now, I mean, if we do that, we're probably going to have to grow forests just to make copies of all those slips of paper. So I'm trying to work an amicable solution. How do we prove this expenditure without that thermal slip? And one of the aspects that we seem to have agreement on is via the West Bank fleet account, because those transactions are captured on that report, and those reports have got up to 46 error codes that trigger us as management to say this card is being abused for this various reason. There's 46 reason codes on that. As soon as that is formalized, then I hope that that would be put us in a better position on this account to be audited in the future.
But on that point, Chief, the technology that you can keep even a very one dot information, because the Auditor General here raises the concern of yourself not monitoring the issues of government garage and are not supported by valid expenditure information. So these issues that the Auditor General is raising around the government garage, you are not monitoring. This is what the Auditor General says. And on top of that, you are not making sure that the valid documentation that you have a problem with is kept. So I'm simply saying that you can scan and keep for a long time. You can keep a document for, I mean, in Parliament, yes, we do the up and down. You know, Parliament does the same. Members are required to, when you claim you're traveling, you submit a slip. And out of the 400 members that travel every day, in fact, Parliament is able to keep that record. I'm saying that there always means, you know, of trying, you know, to keep information that is required for accounting. That's why I'm saying that even if you spend 5 rand, as long as it's the state money, public, you'll have to provide clips or evidence of that they have spent that money. So I'm saying that, you know, these are things that we have been dealing with government garage for years. The last financial year, it was not 105 million. And the agreement between the Department of Home Affairs and the government garage itself does not exist, and even today it does not exist. Now, these issues, see, we have dealt with them before. We're dealing with them today. We hate to repeat questions of issues that we have dealt with before. You see, because if we are really, one of the things that I will do, DG, is that we'll give you again the document of the committee research that we have done on the annual report. In it, it had a number of questions on non-compliance. We're not able to go into each and every question of what we're going to ask you today. But we'll give you this document. It's a formal document that we'll give you. We'll expect you to respond to the document. There are two documents. One of them is on your strategic objective that you have set up. You said these are things that we're going to achieve. Members attempted because of time, obviously. You know, we're supposed to have spent the whole week engaging with you around this and so forth. But because of time, we only spend 2-3 hours. We don't have time. But we'll give you this document. We'll expect you, as you do your day-to-day work, maybe in a week, spend some time and look at what Parliament has asked. You know, because we'll definitely want to get the response. Because these are things that, when we say that we want to make this call, it's the same call that the minister made last time when we got the disclaimer. All is correct. Disclaimer is not just a normal thing that the simple say, those are general opinion, the disclaimer, thank you very much, go back and see you next year again. We're not going to allow it. The fact is that there are serious issues that need to be addressed. And clearly, with the engagement and having listened to yourself, you are not going to be able to do these things now, as much as we appreciate the achievement that you have made. But you're not going to be dealing with these things now. You're still going to get another report in the next financial year. That is not going to be different from the issues that are raised here. Because these issues that are here are quite long-term issues that we have to deal with. That is why we have to, at the end, I don't know if the DG still have issues, DG, he wanted to respond, maybe having cut you a little bit. Allow the DG maybe to say a few things that maybe has noted there, so that we can then conclude these issues, DG. It's quite long that they've been engaging on this, and we are pressed by time. And then we can then move into other issues, so that we can then close this matter and resolve, as a committee, that this is how we resolve on this issue. Is there anything that you still
want
to raise around the issue?
No, thanks, Chair. Just because the questions were asked, I think the Madam Wendy has gone. She asked about the internal audit. Members would know that that's been part of the package until we got a new person in charge of the audit function. We were not having committees functioning, members short, etc., etc. So. That's part of the problem of transformation, getting new people to do these things, and they come in time. There was a question asked about the vetting. Please, we are highly dependent on NIA, who have declared that they have capacity constraints. The vetting is done jointly with NIA, but mainly by NIA. So that's why less than 50%, if that's what it is, of the people were vetted. The, I think government coverage has been a single courier. That single courier, what happened in the past was that there was a number of couriers who were assigned work. Some would collect documents from Pretoria, processed IDs, and take them back. And another set of people would go to a particular office and collect the application forms. The decision was that, you know, it works a lot more efficiently to give this assignment to a SIM. When you collect documents, you drop off your cards that are ready and when you take them back. And their footprint is large. This is across the country. They are affiliated to the post office. I think they are a company that's associated with them. But they have a footprint across the country, and I think they have the capacity, it needs to be monitored, it's managed by a service level agreement now. Chair, thank you very much, and thanks for the opportunity to talk on these issues. Safe to say that I think these things will take time. You have the power to order other things. Know that whoever else comes to do these things will need time, and they will not get you your results unless you give them time. Thank you.
Didi, thank you very much for the report. I see that you are trying to close.
Yes, Chairperson. I was surprised because Chairperson, I made the proposal.
Okay.
From ANC side.
Okay. Now, the proposal that was made by Hussein, and it was seconded by Wabus Khosana earlier when we were still engaging. Therefore, I think that as a result that they, having received this report, the annual report and the financial report of the Department of Home Affairs, today, the 22nd of October, the committee will recommend that the minister should request assistance from the Office of Treasury and DPSA, specifically to help the department around the issues of the internal control. And the issue of capacity to the department by DPSA, especially on helping the department to be able to employ people and field those vacancies. Because the department currently operates with a lot of acting people. The IT section is on a person. On civic services, we have an acting person. And other, you know, senior positions that need to be filled. And clearly from the input that was made by the Director General, it is going to be very difficult for him to achieve what he has set up to achieve if he does not have the support. Therefore, this call that we are making, we'll make a resolution of the committee, which later I will distribute to members, which will then go to the House. Having gone to the House will then have to forward it to the minister, either the House tomorrow. Because clearly for us, the very serious concern that we always have a situation of lack of proper control with regard to the public funds. And the question of compliance of legislation, I think, is one of the areas that we want to call on the department to immediately look at the issues that the Auditor General has raised and what Parliament has raised in the two documents that I'll give to the Director General, which are questions that members are asking the department to look at and to respond on when they have time. And we'll ask that the minister give report to Parliament within a month on his recommendations, the recommendations that we're making to the department, to the minister, to really take this assistance, because we will not allow this department to really not being able to meet its strategic, you know, a position. We have not yet detailed the issue of immigration and the number of things of civic services. So I've not gone into those details because of time constraints. But I would believe that the issues that we are raising in this document here, which is a document from Parliament now, you'll be able to respond to them. And if you respond to them, at some point when we come back during the November month, I know that we'll have time at some point. We'll ask the department to come and brief us on those issues that we have sort of tabled to you. So the two documents are the documents that I will give to the DG to watch for, to respond on as we move forward. On that note, members, I think this is how we sort of sum up this engagement with this recommendation that we are making as a committee for us to be able to help the Director General of Home Affairs to achieve what he has set up to achieve. It's what I think we can contribute now as Parliament, and we still have a lot of confidence that the department will be able to really move out of the kind of challenges that they're faced with now. The plan that the DG has, it only needs a little bit of capacity within public service and administration for it to be realized. On that note, DG, we really thank you very much, and we believe that in the next financial year, we will get a very clean report, if that support can come in on that watch for on that plan. You want to add into what I've said?
Thank you, Chairperson. Before you finalize.
Not yet,
because Chairperson, here we've got immigration, unaudited immigration account. When is this?
That's what I'm saying, that part of the document that we give to the Director General, there are questions around immigration, and I think that would then form part of that response that we'll get when we meet in the next month. I think we're meeting on the 11th of November. And I believe that to be able to respond to those issues. The annual report presentation and discussion is an ongoing thing. It will not end now until the next financial year that will be delivered. So of course, the point that we have raised, we'll then have to get the detail of that watch fund.
Chairperson, as we are going for election, from ANC side, Chairperson, normally the Department of Home Affairs towards election, they use the young ones from school. Three photos. I just want to find out from the DG.
Can I sort of ask you to wait, please? We'll deal with that when we deal with the smart card report. I know that there are members who have been writing letters to the chairperson requesting the intervention with regard to the issue of ID photos, especially for the rural people and from a community, farming community. So we'll deal with that later when we engage with the so on that note, members will circulate the recommendation of the committee to members. We'll write it properly and then we'll circulate it to members. Can we then move to the smart card presentation, DJ, which again will not have enough time, but it will be correct that we'll receive this presentation. I think we'll have a few questions, but we can then prepare ourselves for the November engagement. That will then form part of the engagement. We can receive the presentation and have brief questions. And then on the issues of the foreigners and the spreading of tents and whatever, I think it's one area that we can deal with in the next meeting. We still have to have a report of the public, GPW, and we're going to have it. Members will have only 30 minutes for lunch and then you go to the house at 2 o'clock. So let's receive this report in the next, I think, 10 minutes, and then we'll know if there's any question that you're not going to ask it today, but we'll leave it for the next meeting, and then we'll then get into the government, the printing works report. Thank you, DG.
Chair, may I ask for some tea out of the training?
Thanks, Chairperson, honorable members. Indeed, ABET is quite critical. So thanks, DJ, for it. Yes, colleagues, this is an update currently of the smart card.
Thank you, Mr. Honorable Member.
Which then received the recommendations and proposals, which was then agreed upon on the issue of how we can move forward with the smart card after the President's State of the Nation Address announcement. Indeed, this happened on the 30th of April, and the model for the smart card was then approved, which cleared the way for us to move to the processes, initiating the processes. Of course, the key is that the card can only work through automated fingerprints. This has been achieved in just 1 month, in that we've got about 30 million fingerprints that have been captured. The bank record conversion was also finalized. Announcement of the smart card pilot, then, as I said to Chairperson and all members, followed together with the minister's final stage to confirm that indeed the department commits to rolling out the pilot. I just emphasize the whole smart card but the pilot to test whether on exactly how it can work and then inform the department strategy on the way forward of the smart card. The rollout of the card then was now planned for the first quarter of 2009.
the objective at this stage is in terms of testing the functionality of the solution itself. The smart card tender process closed on the 27th of June, and this happened after 19 suppliers had been called to a conference where we presented the whole document on the smart card. Subsequent to that, then we received 8 suppliers who made a bid to providing the solution to the department. The tender process is currently under evaluation center, and it is expected to be completed this month. The card design itself, drafted by NIA, is currently being finalized with the relevant stakeholders, and there will be a process of approval by cabinet, because the design of the card is the cabinet's decision eventually on how it should look like. The card itself, to reproduce by fraudulent means with some features that is seem to show a similar card. It becomes necessary that the security features of the card are quite advanced and become tamper resistant with clear, durable material. The card will then have physical security features and the means of securing the data and storing it on the card itself, and the use of biometric information for authentication, in other ways to prove that you are who you said you are. Enablement of secure, non-repeated digital signed transactions compliant with the ECT Act becomes critical as a means of improving security. But also the issue of offline verification in cases where the card is not there, in cases where the electronic functionality is not there, it becomes necessary that the card should still be utilized, and therefore then that is what we call the offline verification by means of a biometric data. But also, the smart card itself can be only activated by the card holder biometric. In other words, it will reduce any opportunities of fraudulent utilization of the card or even offloading information on the card, because that will have to be done and be triggered only through biometric means of the card user. This will assist in particularly the country itself to fight against identity theft, which is quite a challenge that we're facing. The automation of the personalization process also will prevent fraud at the creation of the smart card. There will be a particular way in which the personalization will be done. In other words, the loading of information onto the card itself. Prevention of fraudulent access to face value documents by means of having a fraudulent identity document will also be reduced, if not eliminated. In relation to other benefits that have been identified in relation to time and quality, this will be a highly automated process, which then, as DG indicated in the annual report, we were dealing with 80. Handovers currently at 15. This will reduce even that to even a minimal level of being labor intensive. Immediate transaction with minimal errors and faster processing time will lower, and we believe that the repeat visitors will get this. If we look at our stress plan, it indicates that even the 60 days we have targeted for now will even be shorter once we have the smart card process. The card will have scalable capabilities to run multiple applications. This will include, in particular, the issue of other functions that other departments might want to utilize the card for, or also the determination of other functionalities that the third parties might require. So the card will have that capability to scale up its capabilities to be used across the country. Is access to HA and other government services, especially in remote areas, due to offline verification as well as on-chip applications. Self-service internet for the people who have access to these advanced means of electronics will be able to utilize the card, and thus not having to really move up and down to offices themselves. The cost implications to reduce the cost associated with the identity theft. this is one of the biggest challenges. And I'm glad that currently, even when we're dealing with the online, the banks have come forward, in particular, financial institutions, just to see how we can work together, just to use the component of online verification to help deal with the white collar crime and make sure that we minimize through identity theft and the ability of syndicates to siphon money from the country. And therefore, believe that there will be commercial and financial benefits. Fraudulent access to government services, as we know, that's one of the greatest challenges, that the reason why people want our cards in fraudulent means is to access social grants and other services. We believe this will be minimized quite greatly. But also that a card can be utilized by other government departments. The tender itself, as we have spoken, was initiated on the 16th of May. This tender is an open tender by the direction of the minister. And it was, then was issued to all suppliers via CETA. 90 suppliers came to the fore at the conference where they were briefed at the briefing session. And then thereafter, they responded and we closed on the 27th of June. The Tender Evolution Committee was split to avoid to ensure that there is segregation of functions. And quite clearly that no one sits in the same committee throughout in one or the other, just as another risk management component of this tender process. So there will sit up an evaluation, a technical evaluation committee, plus a pricing evaluation committee. The tender evaluation process is expected to be completed, as I indicated initially, by end of this month. The committee itself, we have indicated there just to indicate the components of the committee and how it was constituted and who is participating, and those are the roles of departments represented. National Treasury, it became necessary that the Auditor General oversees the process as we move from one stage to the other, just to ensure that the process is checked in terms of its cleanliness and correctness and its integrity in particular. So those are the departments that are involved and institutions that are involved. So currently, we have the feedback from CETA that in all possibility, next week we should be able to, they will be able to sit and eventually give us the feedback on the recommendations committee report, which then they will pass on to the department as soon as they've done that. Thank you very much.
All right, remember, as I've said, that what we'll do here, we'll receive this presentation, then we'll sort of shelve the questions, and then we'll then come back when we meet in the next round and deal with the rest of the issue. But just in brief, with regard to other departments, do you have any involvement of any department from either transport, as initial, safety and security, whoever? What is the role of other departments then? Are they playing a role? Because it takes me back to the annual report of 2001-2002, when the department said that there's engagement with other departments to look at the usability of the card, you know, so that it deals with, you know, all of those other issues of your support grant. The worry is that you have Department of Public Service. The one Emma Grant, they have their card, you know, transport, they have their own card. But initially, when the whole thing started, Department of Home Affairs was supposed to be the department, in fact, that sort of lead with that particular card. Because if you look at the annual report of 2001-2002 of the department, confirms that that Department of Home Affairs will have to consult with all of those ones so that you don't have pieces of cards that are flying all over the country. And this is what I just want to understand now. But we'll deal with the rest when we come back if there was a divergence when someone decided. I know that transport decided to move its own way, DG, and they have their own card there. And the initial government position, based on the report, was to have one single card for the country. I'm not sure give us a brief description.
Thanks very much, Chair. It would indeed be very desirable that we have one card for as many departments as possible, even non-government. It's convenient to the carrier. The executive took the position that to get this thing off the ground would require that Home Affairs takes the lead anyway. I think other departments are aware that this is taking place, but the concern was that if you waited until everybody got their own approvals, you'd just never take off with the smart card. But the card is, as has been pointed out, scalable. In other words, once you have the key information that is required for Home Affairs purposes, you could still get the Department of Transport, Social Development, or any other, really, to put in the chip that is in the smart card, their own information. So I think that's the approach that was taken, that get this thing off the ground, welcome, invite others, and hopefully people agree. The concern being that if you waited until everybody agreed, it just would take forever. That was the position of the executive of the minister, which was also conveyed to cabinet. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG, on that part. We have agreed that we're not going to have questions. We'll share them with all those tender processes, the budget, the what, we'll deal with them when we meet next month, members. Please don't even attempt. Can we then get the report of the GPW, and I know that again, I was talking to Mr. Moya, and he says, always, you know, you put me the last. Yeah, because you're the last in the report, Mr. Moya. But just take us through your report, Mr. Moya. Members may ask one or two questions, but we are still going to call you because I know that there's a wonderful achievement of the new passport machine that you have achieved, Mr. Moya. We may want to showcase that maybe in the next round when we meet. But for now, can you give us your presentation?
You want a 5 minute
press?
No. Can you ask the reason why you are running the DG?
Why will it be with him?
I
want to know. So, yeah, no. Let's begin with the presentation. You're not dead, you're not dead, GPW. There are still outstanding issues, Moyana, that you still owe the Parliament. And I hope that when you do your presentation, you're going to start with what you owe Parliament. You remember? Yeah? No, that's fine. You still owe us your strategic plan. That was not approved. We asked you to go back and do a number of things. But we may deal with it in the next round. You're my brother. I don't want to hammer you very hard. You're one of the most wonderful persons that we admire in this committee, you know? Even if you're wearing your overall today. Is that right?
Thank you.
will give you.
Okay.
20 minutes. Let's say about 15 minutes. But bear in mind that the approximate will take chief because I don't want to leave you outside. We'll take your presentation first, but we're going to measure that with the strategic plan later, ne? Because I don't want to take the strategic plan now and then come back and say, give us your number. So just give us your report now, and then when we meet in the next month, we'll then deal with the rest of the issues that you have raised. Ne? So let's, yeah. Thank you, sir. You're on the floor now. Members, can we have a little bit of order for members just to take their seats and start the process of presentation?
Chairperson, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, GPW is represented by myself, the CEO, and the Acting Chief Financial Officer. First, the Chair would like to thank the Portfolio Committee for the opportunity and hope that we can give the Committee an insight into the progress and development at GPW for the 2007 and 2008 financial year and beyond, and also provide insight into the key audit issues and proposed action plans to address these issues. We also want to provide an update on the conversion process to date, noting that this matter is still highly confidential. Provide the Portfolio Committee with a high-level overview of the funding requirements going forward. We must also emphasize that the success of GPW is also key and strategic to the turnaround of Department of Home Affairs and the sanctity of state, as GPW is a mandated state security. The background and discussion to date indicate whilst a lot has been done, the sustainability of GPW still remains a challenge. As you know, GPW was established in 1888 as a government printer, but because of asset stripping that has occurred over a number of years and lack of investment, this organization has not moved forward. In 1976, GPW was established as a trading entity under the Department of Home Affairs, but it has been unable to secure adequate revenues to capitalize and invest in modern facilities and equipment required of a state-of-the-art security printer that we want to be. A business case was prepared and presented to National Treasury and DPSA last year in May for conversion, but that business case was rejected due to its inability to provide financial viability. We want to emphasize that GPW is key to the delivery of security printing for the Department of Home Affairs and other national departments. And therefore, the efficient, secure functioning of GPW is critical to the Republic of South Africa's external image, its performance and commitment to its own stakeholders. While the conversion has received attention, the organization was bleeding operationally, and at the heart has been the loss of skills due to uncompetitive salaries, poor working conditions, and restructuring fatigue. GPW facilities are not conducive to a manufacturing type of environment, and hence inefficient and costly production processes. This was exacerbated by lack of capital injected into the organization in order for it to be, which was unavailable at proper time for it to have modern facilities and equipment. Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, the Auditor General has raised various qualification issues, and these have not been fully addressed to date. Department of Home Affairs charge partly for printing of documents, but funds flow to national fiscals and not GPW. The profit in code could not be retained for future investment in the assets and infrastructure of GPW, therefore resulting in asset stripping in the organization. Opportunities have presented themselves for printing services outside the Republic of South Africa, but could not be maximized and capitalized due to lack of capacity and other constraints. Although some funds have been provided in the MTEF, GPW still requires additional government funding, but this is inadequate to meet its capitalization requirements, and there is uncertainty on the future of these allocations. GPW therefore ventured into other printing areas to remain viable, but these are non-core to its mandate. There is no proper governance structure in place to guide and advise GPW and its shareholders on the print environment, operations, and best practice. We want to emphasize, Chairperson, the Department of Home Affairs under the current leadership of our DG has now fully understood these issues and is committed to implement a turnaround strategy that meets all stakeholders' aspirations while ensuring a logical and safe process and sustainable GPW. I'll therefore, Chairperson, and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, would like to give you a few indicators, and then I'll pass this to my acting Chief Financial Officer to deal with the matters that have been raised by the Auditor General. However, despite these challenges, service delivery continued, and the key financial outcomes and issues of 2007-2008 can be summarized as follows. In the printing sector, we have made substantive development in the sense that we have made a great additional growth in terms by 33% due to the fact that we have printed additional exams for our country and the neighboring countries. In terms of contract printing, we've seen a 17% increase, but this is due to limited internal GPW capacity due to lack of modernization and equipment. In terms of publications, which include the Government Gazette, we've seen a 25% increase, more advertisement placed in government and provisional gazettes. We've made less success in terms of warehousing because government departments are buying outside the GPW framework, especially on terms of A4 paper. We are not cost effective. In relation to this, in terms of personnel expenditure, we have seen an underperformance in this respect because we have a lot of posts that have not been filled, an issue that we'll discuss with you, Chairman, and members of the Portfolio Committee. In terms of administration, we've also seen an underdevelopment and underperformance of 22% due to the fact that the promotional material staff development are not being dealt with adequately. Production and stores, we've seen a 1% growth, which is insignificant in the manner of business in which we are. In terms of equipment, we have not been buying equipment, so there is a lot of equipment that we hire, especially in the environment in which we operate. Transformation processes, yes, we've seen sufficient growth in that, because if we want to transform into a state-mandated security organization, there is a need of us to transform the organization internally, and we've seen a growth of 30% in terms of expenditure. In other courses, there have been depreciation challenges. Chairperson, because of time constraints that you have given to us, I'll therefore like to skip the slide that is the following slide and allow the acting chief financial officer to deal with issues that were raised by the Auditor General. I should think key to this is that slide, let me go back, is the question of debtors, collection of money. And I should think this has been an issue the Portfolio Committee has been asking repeatedly over and over for the past 3 years, and we shall deal with it substantially. And therefore, I'll request my acting Chief Financial Officer to take you through the remaining portion of the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and all honourable members. Chair, in the interest of time, I'm just going to make a brief summary.
His name is Rasi Banada, Acting Chief Financial Officer.
As long as you don't say Erasmus, sir, because then I'll be down here. So I want to refer you to pages 12 to 14 of the presentation. Now, I don't want to go through those details. Just to summarize for you that what we did is we analyzed, based on the last audit, we analyzed what were the causes of those various issues that the Auditor General raised. And from that, you will see that we've basically got six categories there. But you'll see the issues that comes out clearly is clearly the capacity systems, internal control environment, and obviously technical skills. Just to mention to you, in the financial department at GPW, there's not one person
with even a degree in finance. And we need to comply with international standards, unlike Home Affairs. We need to comply with standards of GAAP and IFRS. So the complexities are high, and especially we're in a manufacturing environment where you need to cost your products properly. It poses real challenges. Further on in the presentation, on pages 15, pages 15 to 22, sir, we analyzed all those problems, like I said. We also went through the detail of looking at all these various issues and the possible solutions for them. You'll see there's our action plan in addressing all those issues raised by the Auditor General, and that action plan is based on the 2007 as well as the 2008 audits. So there's a detailed plan with relevant time frames and the responsible persons, and that operation is now currently underway. You also find on page 23, and I think maybe the CEO should talk to this, and maybe I should suffice there, just to save him time.
Chairperson and members of the portfolio committees, what we want to emphasize is that GPW has a strategic objective based on four pillars, strategic pillars. Technological upgrading, which is modernization of its equipment and technology. In terms for us to be able to produce ID, passports, and all face value items for the state. The second pillar is the production process optimization. This is the new facility wherein we want to move all our activities to. This has been a concern for a number of years. We've been operating in an inefficient environment, which does not provide us with efficiencies and cost-effectiveness in terms of the productive process. We'd like to indicate to yourselves that we do have a facility that we have located, our passport system. The machine has arrived. We are in the process of testing the equipment and technology thereof. We'd like to thank the Department of Home Affairs in particular for this, because without this piece of equipment, this country would be having a serious problem come next year, 2009, and going forward, where in our passport currently is being undermined internationally and also being questioned as to its authenticity. We want to pride ourselves, together with Department of Home Affairs, in the discussions and meetings that we have held with other international stakeholders. This is being heralded as one of the best passports that this continent is going to produce, second to none, possibly to the one that is produced by other countries. We are proud to say we do that. It's with pride. We cannot stop emphasizing that. Yes. The third pillar is marketing effectiveness and alignment. Chairperson and members of the portfolio committee, for GPW to remain a viable organization, able to meet its requirements, both financial and otherwise, it has to have a very strong marketing principle and ideology. We'll be able to take an aggressive marketing stance both in the Republic of South Africa and SADC and in other regions for all face value documents, passports, IDs, exams, and the like. And the last component is the conversion, which we have been branding as corporatization. We'd like to report to yourselves here that we have moved steps ahead by moving into a government component, which was approved by Department of Public Service Administration on the 1st of April 2008. The view that we have taken is that this will be a viable and the model that we'll adopt for us to be able to become an organization that is able to stand on its own. We have presented a business plan and a business case to DPSA, National Treasury. We have prepared notices. We have done a presentation to the Joint Economic Committee, wherein the business case was approved. It is waiting the concurrence of the Minister of Home Affairs and National Treasury, and National Treasury, Minister of Finance,
and Parliament.
Yes. We'd like to indicate to yourselves that we have done a thorough consultative process, starting with our mother organization, Department of Home Affairs, Government Communication and Information Services, SAPS, national intelligence, and of course, organized labor. This in mind, therefore, it tells you, Chair, that despite the processes and problems that we have within GPW, we've made significant inroads in order to support the turnaround strategy within Department of Home Affairs by providing them on time, the shortened time that they've indicated on ID and passports. Thank you, Chair.
That's good. Let's go to, I accept that we'll have few questions, maybe one question per member, and then what members must do is that note number of these questions. You still have to go through this report. We still have to go through your strategic plan, which you know that we have not approved, but we understand that we are in the transformation stage. Therefore, what will happen is that the first meeting, Mr. Moyan, that the committee is going to convene in November. That's when all the questions and relevant engagements will take place, right? So let me start with you, Jose, Charlie, Mimegi, that's fine. Chief, I know that you're still new, you're still trying to adjust. I know it's a very rough committee for you, so, but you learn as we move forward. Eh? But thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question.
Only one question.
No. Give me a chance. Protect me, Chair. Protect me, Chair.
Can you behave? You laugh.
Thank you, Chairperson. One of the concern raised by the Auditor General is non-compliance with legislation. For example, the Judge White's judgment was not implemented. How long are you going to finalize the implementation of Judge White's recommendation? Receiving other questions for the 11th. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I don't waste the time. I'll keep my question for the next month. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mine is one question, Chair, with regard to the new home for the GPW. How far are they with it? Thank you.
Fine. Thank you very much. Only the two. That wise recommendation, the new home.
Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee. The first question, I would like to indicate that the Judge White recommendations are dealt with at Department of Home Affairs, not by GPW. It's a departmental issue. We happen to be in the middle because some members of who are affected by the Judge White Commission happen to be relocated from the previous TBVC states to GPW, and they raise a concern with the ministry, and therefore we're not respondents to this issue. On the new home, I would like to gloat a bit, if you allow me. We have some photos to show you. We have significant photos to show you that we have indeed moved. By the end of November, part of the passport factory as a whole would move into that facility with the new equipment and technology running in that facility, if you may permit me, Chair.
Now, with regards to capacity, recruitment, and all of that, because that has been one of the problems. Before that, I'll give Mr. Moyani an opportunity. Do you want to showcase a little bit?
Well, let me respond to capacity in terms of human resources.
No.
Showcase.
Yeah, I know that you want to shine.
Yeah.
I know you want to shine. No, you're wearing your overall today. Okay, can you just shine and then let's see how you're shining then, Mr. Moyan. And then is this the new building?
No.
Or is that the old hospital?
That's the old sanitarium.
Hospital.
That's the old prison. That's where we are.
Okay.
This is the old. This is was where we moved into the new facility when they started working. The infrastructure was refurbished. Near completion. Machinery arriving. Being installed. This is an old substation. This is a new substation. These are the Japanese technicians and engineers. Installation of the passport equipment and machinery. Process is being completed. State-of-the-art equipment that we have. Chair, I should think this the country must marvel. I don't think we can speak much about Department of Home Affairs about
it. For now, we have seen pictures. We'll do oversight, Mr. Moyani. But I know that it's in a passion to make sure that you deliver a proper facility. Now, Mr. Moyan, in your allocation, you allocated in the medium-term expenditure last year. The Minister of Finance announced that 800 million rand will be given for Home Affairs for a new passport machine. And I see that your allocation from Home Affairs is 110 million rand. Can you tell us where is the rest of the money? Did you receive 800 million as announced by the Minister during the medium-term expenditure? When he said 800 million rand to be given for Home Affairs for a new passport machine.
Chairperson and portfolio committee members, I might not be off air with the details, but all I would like to report is that in terms of the allocation that even came from National Treasury, is that we were supposed to get 110, that's what we got.
110 is the one that you're doing all of this work that we see there.
And we got further this year in the current MTEF financial year, we got 135 million.
As allocation from the department?
Yes.
Which is your normal, what has been, your normal allocation has been 200,000?
Yes.
Okay, we'll get the details of it at some point. When we attempt to go further, Mr. Moyan, we want to take this opportunity to thank you, but with a very serious concern around the Auditor General's findings. We'll deal with those issues when we meet with you in the next round. But we appreciate the wonderful work that we are really putting together. And I can see that we are getting somewhere because one of the problems has been the accommodation. And people would not want to associate themselves with that old mental hospital. That was very difficult for you even to attract professionals to work in that old hospital. So we really appreciate what you have done so far. But we'll engage further. On the issue of corporatization or whatever that you are trying to do now. Don't forget that there's a resolution of SCOPA, there's a position of the portfolio committee that we are not going to corporatize a government printing one.
Yes.
So whatever model that you're going to bring is going to be a model that gives state control, because it's an area that we do not want to see anybody outside the state doing the printing of our things and all of that. You know it. But don't respond now, Mr. Moyan. No, don't now. Let's deal with it, Mr. Moyan, when you do the full presentation of the process in which you are engaging in. On that note, members, I want to take this opportunity to thank the department, Director General, his absentia, and those that are still here. He's not the report that is leaving. He's leading the delegation and he has gone out without saying he's going.
Charlie,
yeah. Where is the Director General?
Communication,
where is the Director General?
He is next door conducting an interview.
Oh, he's next door conducting an interview. Yep. Okay, I was worried because he's leading this delegation and will not want to close the meeting without him being available. But already we have dealt with number two. On that note, therefore, the biggest worry that we want to deal with Mkhize is the issue of the ID and the support on the ID campaign. Because currently we have launched the campaign, normally you'll have to look at the issues that, helping. If it's a campaign helping the communities, those who cannot afford to pay for ID photos. And it's a call that a number of members of parliament have made, and I believe that come up with something. You may not deal with it now, but in the next registration, let's make sure that every citizen has an ID book to register, especially those who don't have cash in rural areas and in villages where they don't have money to pay for photos. Can you come up with something or make some allocation, to help you know, the poorest of the poor to be able to vote and exercise that democratic right by voting, which we fought for so hard, this right. Anne? Let's not deny them that what you call. Let's try and help them. On that note, members, thank you very much. Lunch is being arranged next door here. All of you are invited. I hope today they cook proper food. You know, yesterday it was hectic. So let's go and have lunch next door here. And then members, I know that the 2 o'clock they have to go to the committee, to the chamber. On that note, thank you very much. Pass our gratitude to the Director General. Thank you. All right.
Don't every time ask me where I go.
I'm not sure.